Ladies and gentlemen, a World Wide Web proudly presents... Recorded live in Chicagoland, USA.
I am enjoying the reefer.
A new episode of the podcast, Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. With your hosts, Luke Ski and Carrie Dalby.
Everything's awesome. Just take a look around you. You just can't go wrong. The possibilities may astound you.
Hi, welcome to Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Luke.
And it's bad.
And we have a rapport. Or something.
Yeah.
We got to work on this intro.
Yeah. As our Paul would say.
Yes. I wanted to mention, as a follow-up from last week's episode where Carrie was berating me for not having listened to the Nerdist podcast, I have since then listened to all the episodes of the Nerdist podcast.
He's even more caught up than I am.
Yeah, because the new episode came out today that I snagged. And basically, if you're a comedy nerd like I am, like I've been for decades, especially when it comes to like stand-up comedy...
Or if your name is Gabe, you know.
Yeah. I mean, just basically, this is an incredible podcast. It's like,
yes.
The hosts are nerdy individuals, yet they are also really into comedy on a super nerdy level and really into stand-up and the craft of being funny. And Chris Hardwick and his co-hosts have a lot of great, awesome guests on the show, like Drew Carey and Jim Gaffigan and Joe McHale and their first live theater done episode has
Adam Savage
of MythBusters, and it's a really hilarious episode.
Yes, it's the most full of win one that they have, in my opinion, and it makes me much more excited for Wootstock because, you know, now that I know how awesomely cool and funny Adam Savage is, you know, I don't really watch MythBusters, but you know, I'm still excited to see Adam Savage at Wootstock because of that. Anyways.
I just wanted to recommend the Nerdist podcast, which is it Nerdist.com or TheNerdist.com?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's where you can go sign up for that, so I highly recommend it, as well as Carrie, who already recommended it last week. I wanted to mention a couple other podcasts. Dr. Floyd's 8th season has just started, so for those of you who haven't been listening or haven't been, you know, checking up on it, I just wanted to give everyone a reminder. The new season of Dr. Floyd started. Episode 802 has a musical number in it, which is awesome.
I only just listened to 801. Did 802 just come out today
or
something?
It came out. If not, no, it wasn't today. It was yesterday. I think it came out.
Must have been, but like,
yeah,
after I synced everything. But the Waffle Brothers have a cameo in 801.
Yeah, and you know, I'm
like all jealous and stuff.
Well, I'm jealous because like, you know, they have all these cool cameos, and I'm like, why the hell didn't Grant call me, man? I would have loved to have done a cameo.
You've been on Dr. Floyd. I haven't.
Well, yeah, but the Waffle Brothers were in season one playing the Wright Brothers, so it's like they were bringing back people who, you know...
I didn't realize they were.
Yeah, all the historical figures they visited in 801, were from previous episodes. So I was like, if they were, you know... That's why he's like, we're running out of cameos. It's like callbacks to all these earlier episodes, and I'm like... Dude, you could have visited P.T. Barnum, man. You know. But anyway, but yeah, Dr. Floyd, awesome.
I know Grant's not listening, but if he was, it would be the awesomest sauce if I ever got to be on that show.
Indeed.
I can do more voices than you think I can.
And then I want to mention The Scope. On the most recent episode of The Scope, I sent in a special audio comment referring to their Scope Madness tournament.
Or should we say two of you did?
Sort of, yeah. I don't want to give away what it is, but if you would like to hear a really interesting audio comment from me sent to The Scope that they play in their entirety, it's about 2.5 minutes long, listen to the most recent episode of The Scope, which you can hear at thescopeshow.com. It's within like the first third of the episode, so... Yeah, but I love The Scope anyway, and I'm happy to tell people to go listen to it.
Yay!
So, yay! I wanted to mention real quick because, you know, trying to figure out what songs to play on the show, There's something I considered playing, and then I decided it would kind of take up too much time, and besides, the video aspect of it helps with the humor to some degree. There's a new song that came out by Insane Clown Posse recently called Miracles, and it got a lot of attention recently because it's almost like this weird reset button was hit, and everybody forgot that ICP is a group that, you know, generally doesn't take itself too seriously, you know, like all the silly stuff they've done in the past and everything. But, you know, in recent years, you know, they've been trying to do songs with more positive messages rather than ones that are all about, you know, I'm going to get your neck bone chop, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, very,
you know.
Very violent of what ICP songs
so I have. So the song called Miracles is like, you know, kind of this positive statement. It's like, hey, everyone, you know, check out all these cool things in the world, you know. You know, life and friends and technology and nature and, you know, it's just this general positive thing. And it's cool. And, I mean, there's some funny lines in it, too.
Are the Juggalos hating on it?
Well, here's the thing. It's like, there's one line where Shaggy Two Dope says, fucking magnets, how do they work? You know, as kind of another example of look at all these wonderful, wondrous things in the world, and that was just one of the lines that just kind of, you know, came out
kind
like
of a throwaway line.
Yeah,
and then what?
And elsewhere in the song, Shaggy made a comment to the effect of like, you know, I don't want to talk to no scientist because you know something it just makes me pissed or something, you know. And there's all these great images that are in the video. It's a really well made video, I think. So. It's not so much the Juggalos are hating on it, it's that the rest of the world saw this, and apparently, like I said, like reset button, they kind of forgot these guys are jokesters. I mean, hell, they're dressed as freaking clowns, for God's sake. And they're, like, treating it as if Jay and Shaggy are so dumb that they don't know how things work in the world. Like, for reals, like, you know... Like, the point of the song was to be like, hey, things are cool. Just think about how great, how everything's a miracle, how things are awesome. And everyone's like, look at how stupid they are. They don't know how magnets work. You know, it's like, you're missing the point. So Kiki pointed out, I don't know the link to this, and I'm not going to look it up. You can try to hunt it down on the internet yourselves. Somebody took, like, a science textbook and did, like redid 5 pages of a science textbook as if it were written by Juggalos. You know, just like, hey, check this shit out. You plant a seed in the ground and shit like grows and shit. It's awesome, you know. And it's pretty funny. Now, you know, ICP has never been like super mainstream, but it blew me away because I watched Saturday Night Live this weekend and the last sketch they did before they went to, you know, the end of the show goodnight thing was they basically did a parody of that video with Ryan Phillippe was hosting and... Oh, shit, I keep forgetting the name of one of the newer guys who's really funny. I apologize, but they basically, they called themselves, they were either the Thrilla Killa Clowns or the Outrageous Clown Squad. And it's like, here's their new song, you know, Magical Mysteries. And so SNL did a spoof of ICP that was so incredibly perfect and dead on and, like, pointing out, like, basically... doing that over-exaggerative, yeah. Like, they're so stupid. Where does the sun go away at night? You know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away much more than that. So basically, go to YouTube, look at the ICP Miracles video, and then go to nbc.com/SNL and look for the Outrageous Clown Squad video that parodies it, because they're both brilliant. And like I said, I was considering playing them both in the show, and then I realized the video element is just... It would just be better if you saw it that way, you know, to really honestly preserve.
Oh, so earlier today you were thinking about playing it as a song?
Yeah, it was on my list.
I was sitting here thinking the whole time, like, you know, something as short as a music video, I could have watched it ahead of time, so I'd have something to say about it.
But anyway, we're going to move on and play a song. This is actually a pretty short song. It's by our friends Ukla the Mock, and here it is right now. Here's Ukla.
Ukla, Ukla, Ukla.
Yes.
Well, come on down to Gorilla City. We got all the gorillas you need. We got Gorilla Grodd, Solid Bar, and Beppo the Super Monkey. We got Congorilla and Buana Beast, every super powered monkey from the west to the east. Monsieur Mala and Ajuba are both deceased, but we got them here anyhow.
Well, down here at Gorilla City, we got gorillas. We got all kinds of gorillas. We got miles of files, all different
different styles of gorillas. We got so many gorillas, if you stacked them up, they'd reach all the way to the JLA Watchtower. Not that I'm advocating gorilla stacking, mind you. You there, young sir, you look like you just lost your very best friend. You did. Well, at least it's not like he was shot screaming into the cold vacuum of space, or he was. Well, nothing helps assuage the soul-crushing devastation that accompanies the loss of a loved one like a quality pre-owned gorilla. Here in Gorilla City, we got nothing but gorillas. Let's take out the apes, chimps, gibbons, baboons, and that one manta ray we can't seem to keep out of the men's room.
So if you come on down to Gorilla City, you know you're bound to stay for more than one night. We got Detective Chimp, Sam Simeon, and the Ultra-Humanite. We got Giganta and Titano. You know, the kids are gonna bug you cause they just gotta go to the only hidden city with an invisible dome, unless you count Atlantis and Kandor.
And that was Gorilla City by Ookla the Mock from their CD Smell No Evil. I'm not sure if Ookla has a website right now. Last time I checked, it was possibly not working.
Really?
But that was several months ago, so I could be wrong.
Okay.
As far as I know, last time I knew it was ooklathemock.com. I'll put
yes.
a link to it, as I usually do for the groups that we play.
Presuming that it exists.
Yes.
There'll be some linky link, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, recently, on an undisclosed date, an undisclosed non-specific date, because I didn't want to tell my mom, I went to the Wisconsin Dells with my husband Josh, and the trip was all too short because we left after work on a Friday, so we didn't get there till close to 8 o'clock, and then I had to be back for a 6 p.m. rehearsal on Sunday night, so the trip was all too short, and I was kind of stressed out about all the opera stuff that was coming up, so I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have, but we had a great weekend. Of course, we had the beer cheese. I have to mention all the food. Since it's showing.
Well,
you should
probably mention that wasn't this whole thing inspired by me doing the song "We're Going to the Dells" and then Josh being like, "What is this Dells place you speak of?" And him really wanting to take a vacation there, inspired by the song.
No.
Oh.
You
lied to me.
No, I didn't.
You lied to me. Yay!
We stopped there before he ever heard the song because we stopped there on our way to Convergence in July, which is where you debuted the song. And I don't believe I played it for him prior to that. I'm not sure. Perhaps I did, but...
Well, I was pretty sure at some point you mentioned Josh saying, like, oh, he really wants to go to the Dells now that he's heard that song and has seen it a little bit.
Well, I mean, the song helped, but I mean, it was more the fact that we stopped at the Dells and we stayed at the Holiday Inn and rode on their crappy little water slide and ate at the Moose Jaw and had beer cheese soup, and then we left. So, you know, like, and then later on the way back, me and Josh and Ken, who had been caravanning together, stopped in the Kalahari and took a quick tour so that Josh could see it, even though we didn't have time to stop there and ride it. And we were also hoping to run into Bill and Moonbeam because they were there at the time, but they must have been in the outdoor section because we didn't run into them. But so then his appetite was even more whetted for the Dells experience. So anyways, we got to go to the Dells. We were there for 2 nights, and we went to Kalahari on Saturday, which I'll get to in a minute. We ate beer cheese soup at the Moose Jaw. We tried our favorite food discovery of the weekend is a place I don't even know if you've been to. It's called the Cheese Factory.
Is that out by the Kalahari?
Kinda.
Yeah, I think I've been there. I think Sarah's been there.
Oh, okay.
Buying cheese.
No, they don't sell cheese. It's a restaurant. I mean, yes, they have cheese in their food items, but it's a restaurant.
Okay, then
it's not a cheese.
I'm thinking of something else.
I don't know why they call it that. Honestly, the name makes no sense to me because it's actually a vegetarian restaurant.
Ah.
But they have amazing food, and Josh had like the most amazing, like one of the most amazing Mexican dishes he's ever had, and he's a total meat eater, and you know. He couldn't believe he had one of the most amazing Mexican dishes he's ever had in Wisconsin. Do we have enough lovely levels on our lovely level levels?
I can turn it up a bit.
Yeah, it looks pretty weak there.
Okay.
So then, and later we ate at a place called The Taste of New Orleans, which was really pretty cool and whetted our appetite for going to New Orleans, which Josh has never been to. And we also ate at this place called Denny's. It's not the chain Denny's. It's an old-timey Denny's that has all this, like, goofy, kitschy, like, 50s and 60s memorabilia and Beatles stuff and Elvis stuff and, like, just decorated just to the gills with all this goofy stuff. And the food was okay, you know, it was somewhere between okay and decent, but, you know, the experience there was good for all the kitschy stuff. But then, so, you know, the main part of our weekend was spent at the Kalahari on Saturday, riding water slides and the lazy river and the so-called wave pool. And my funny story that I haven't gotten to tell anyone yet, that we've literally told nobody this story yet. So I had already kind of, you know, mentioned to Josh that, you know, I sort of, on some levels, I wasn't feeling it. You know, I told him, like, you know, I was just feeling too even keel. I wasn't getting, like, thrilled, by, you know, and filled with, like, overwhelmed with joy or anything, which I think that's just a problem when you get older. Is the older you get, the less you feel that. But, you know, also, I didn't get to ride as many tall water slides as I wanted because Josh is afraid of heights, and, you know, and I'd already been on all of them in the past anyway, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But so I'd already had that conversation with him, and so we're taking what is going to be our last spin on the lazy river before we get into the hot tub and then leave. And since it's our last spin on the lazy river, as if you've ever been on an inner tube on a lazy river, if you know what this is, I know Luke knows what this is, but I don't know if everyone listening knows. It's just like, it's always, pretty much always circular shaped so that you come back to where you started. You're floating on an inner tube, and basically that's what you do. You just float along. But there's also some, like, every now and then there's something that pours down, that, like, from the middle or the side or whatever, to try to get you wet. That you can either avoid it if you float the right direction, or you can get soaked. So since it's our last time out, at first I was like, yeah, let's get soaked. And then after that I was like, no, I'm cold. And then so this kid comes up to us. He's this, like, 9-year-old chubby white kid wearing these, you know, goggles, like, not one of them full set goggles, but like a one on each eye goggles. And he comes up to us and he's like, which one did you want to get wet? And we're like, huh? And he's like, which one did you want to get wet? And Josh said, well, I wanted to get my wife wet, but she would be mad at me if I did. And then I said, let's get him wet, pointing at Josh. So, and because he's not in, because the kid's not in an inner tube, he's walking along away from his inner tube. So he takes and pushes Josh under the water and gets him completely soaked. And both him and I are laughing our ass off. And then he said, and then he goes and pulls me. Right before, when I thought I was in the clear, he goes and pulls me and gets me completely soaked. And, like, we're, like, completely laughing our asses off. And then he's like, no, you both had fun. And then he just, like, walks away. Like, he was like the lazy river angel that, like, totally made the whole day.
And it was the spirit of the Wisconsin Dells, made corporeal.
But
it's like the Patton Oswalt bit. Did I hear somebody say they aren't into it?
Yes, and and then we got a chance to tell his mom that he totally made our day, and she was like, oh yeah, well, he's for sale. And then she was like, just kidding. Right now we're distracted by, what is it?
It's either a woodchuck or a gopher that is living underneath the shed in the backyard, and he kind of comes out from time to time and nibbles on grass. And
he is now out and nibbling on grass.
Yes.
So you have thus proven your previous statement that a hedgehog or beaver or whatever the hell it is lives, yes, under your shed.
Something.
So, So that's all I was going to say about the Dells, other than you should go and you should hear Luke's awesome song about the Dells.
Which Carrie sings on.
Which Carrie's featured on.
Yes. And you're wearing a pink shirt of some kind that you could talk about, because...
Yes, I am wearing a pink shirt that is from the Kalahari at the Wisconsin Dells, and it says Kalahari on it, and it's got all this psychedelic pink and orange and goofy, weird, sick, weird tie-dye.
It has a peace sign made out of other peace signs.
It has a peace sign made out of bubbly other peace signs. And as long as I was doing the what shade of pink is Carrie wearing segment, I just wanted to mention something that I personally find funny about that segment. Every single time I listen to myself do that segment, I can hear the sound of my voice pointing at my chest while I tug on my shirt and examine the color of pink that I'm wearing. So,
well, that's part of the magic of podcasting. It's like Disney Imagineers came in and set it up. We got to make sure when she looks at her shirt that you can tell just by listening to it that she's looking at her shirt.
So, yes, that's a special feature of the podcast that you can listen to.
Yes.
The podcast has many special features.
Well, and now it's time for Opera Talk with Carrie.
I was in an opera, and I got to wear a costume, and Luke came and saw the opera, and I'm glad it's over. And then we had a cool cast party last Sunday night at the Via Veneto, which is where Josh and I got married. And so Josh and I got to dance at the same place we got married less than a year ago, and that was really cool. And so I don't know what else I'll
they didn't have too much scenery there, but it's like the beginning of the second act begins with like a really kind of incredible, stunning thing where all of a sudden the curtains fly apart and there's like 70 people on stage.
Over
so,
70. There's about like 35 children. There's 35 to 45 children and at least 30 adults on stage. And
so,
right before that, the scene ended, the act one ended with like two people.
Yeah.
And... you know, and you didn't suspect that was how it was going to start,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it's like, so it was a nice reveal. It was really good. And I'm proud to say that I was able to spot Carrie within about 10 seconds of the action starting. It's like, oh, there she is. You know, bottom right corner. There's Carrie.
And Ken, if you're listening, I was the one who was selling Mimi her hat. And then I tried to tempt her with a necklace since Ken didn't figure out which one was me till 10 minutes into Act 2.
Ah. But the interesting thing about that and how awesome and cool it was, that it's kind of like, since there's no real scenery, it's like the people themselves are kind of creating the ambiance that, like, in your mind creates the scenery. So it's just really great, and everything's so involved, and you can tell that it was an incredible amount of blocking, and it was a great show. However, one of the performances during that time...
Yes, you weren't there, but...
I wasn't there.
Josh was, and Mr. Tuesday, a.k.a. Jared Perez, was there. And the Friday night performance, during 5 minutes into Act 2, the fire alarm went off, and the show stopped, and everyone had to vacate the entire building. Also going on, in addition to the sold-out opera with the over 70 people on stage, was a piano recital in another room in the building, which was being broadcast live on WFMT. And there was a play going on in another part of the building, and there was an art show going on in another part of the building. And the entire building had to vacate. For 40 minutes, we stood outside in what was a rather chilly evening. Luckily, those of us with heavy costumes were surviving it. Other people who didn't have coats like my husband were freezing their asses off. And it was a really weird experience. The kids on my half of the stage were like running around like maniacs, singing songs and just like having a grand old time. And I heard the kids on the other side of the stage were all like freaking out and scared. But I heard that the working theory is that someone, a disgruntled person who had been fired from the building the previous day, came and pulled the fire alarm to get back at them. But that doesn't, you know, that doesn't account for the fact that me and at least three other actors smelled something funky, kind of burning smell when we were on the stage. So who knows what the story is, but it was, you know, at least we got to go back in and we did get to finish the show.
Did you just start from the beginning of Act 2 all over again?
Yes.
Ah,
yep.
Good.
Yep, yep.
Well, all right. Like I said, it was a great show.
Thank you.
And now I wanted to talk about movies. there, MTV, you know, does their, you know, yearly, you know, MTV Movie Awards thing, and I can't remember if it was actually in one of the awards things or if it was just something they showed in a making of the awards thing, a sketch that they had proposed but didn't actually go through with. But I do remember seeing some portion of this on MTV. They did a sketch where it was like a tribute to some guy, you know, Fred Jabra. I'm making a name up. Fred Jabra. And now a tribute to Fred Jabra, the movie reviewer who loves everything. And, like, they show some guy and he's kind of, you know, effeminate and stuff. And he's got his popcorn and he, like, is saying things like, you know, when I go out and see a film, I just think to myself, wow, I'm seeing a movie. You know, and so basically the joke being that he's the person who writes all of those super positive review blurbs that, you know, get attached to all the crappiest movies ever because this guy, he's just so happy to be seeing a movie that he loves everything.
Like you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I worry about when it comes to myself because it's just like I don't know.
What do you mean worry? What do you...
here's the other side of this.
Boy,
is that... It just, when I was a kid, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Let's just say Goonies, right?
Uh-huh.
Me and my friends, we'd go see Goonies. And we'd see Goonies, and Goonies was awesome.
Right.
And everybody in my group of friends agreed that Goonies was awesome. And we'd see it multiple times, and when it came out on video, we'd watch it multiple times on video, because we agreed that Goonies was awesome.
Chris Mazzalesta hasn't seen Goonies. He needs to see it.
He's not in my age group. He's older.
But he still needs to see it.
He does. But still, so it's like, yeah, and it's like, you know, anything, you know, Beetlejuice, you know, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, you know, just like, there's so many awesome things, and yeah, they come out, and they're awesome.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, in my greater group of friends, I can't find anybody who likes anything. It's like, it's...
But movies aren't as good as they were then.
It just frustrates me. It's like, and basically, it's like, why can't people like things more? You know, it's like,
can't you be more discerning?
A couple years ago, it's like, all right, The Dark Knight and Iron Man. Everyone is in agreement that these two things are good.
Well, not almost everyone.
From my point of view, to me, it seemed everyone said that Iron Man was awesome. The Dark Knight was awesome.
I'm with you.
Everything else sucks. Nothing else is good. You know, it's like, you know, I feel afraid to admit that I like things because I'm afraid of being scorned and made fun of and laughed at.
And mocked.
You know, and mocked.
Don't forget mocked.
By people, you know, by people who sit in trios in Richfield, Minneapolis, and, you know, judge things with a scoring system. You know, people will look down at me and say, oh, you must be some, you know, ignorant, sellout, mundane Philistine because you went and saw that thing that we've all agreed is crappy and you've managed to garner some enjoyment from it. How dare you?
No.
You lose all your hipster geek cred points.
No, you don't. That's ridiculous. You're being so silly.
Well, it just angers me because, like, I want to get excited about...
Why does it anger you?
Because I want to get excited about things and know that, like, you know, the top six other people I hang out with are also excited about the same thing that I'm excited about. And then when it comes out and it's awesome and we all agree and we say yay and we celebrate it and it's cool and there's victory. Damn it.
I think you need something more, more important to be angry about. I mean, you know, you like what you like, you don't like what you don't like, you're excited what you're excited about, and you don't have to apologize to anyone, you shouldn't care what anybody thinks, and just be your fucking self. Be yourself.
Well,
as as the Aladdin genie would say.
Well, it's still, it frustrates me. How come nobody gave a crap about Princess and the Frog?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't see it five times, but I didn't think it was as good as... It wasn't.
It's like that was one of the things I was making
five times.
I was obviously making efforts to get people to rally around this and be like, "Yeah, this is cool," and nobody gave a fuck. Nobody gave a fuck except for you who went to see it. So,
well, Sarah saw it.
Yeah, because she's engaged to me. She kind of had to see it, but she enjoyed it too.
Didn't Steph go see it?
Yes, of course.
Well, see, You can't expect like 95 people to be on board.
And that's,
you know?
And that people wonder why I'm still you know friends with Steph and stuff, because she and I agree on shit that we like, you know, like 99% of the time.
That's
you
not
know?
The only reason, but
yeah,
I mean,
well, it's just kind of like if I call her and I say, you know, the juicy blah 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 thing, she's like blah 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 thing is awesome, and I can count on that with her, you know, and it makes me feel good. Like, yes, I'm not some kind of dunce for liking
You're
things.
Not. So why are you worried about other people's opinions not matching yours?
Because I'm tired. It's like I've spent my whole life being the outcast, and now it's like everyone's an outcast, so I'm the outcast amongst the outcasts.
That's
and I'm
why
just
I
fed
wear
up
pink.
With it.
That's why I wear pink, because yes. I like being the outcast among outcasts. So there.
Sometimes I just get tired of it,
oh,
and I just
bunny.
Want...
Bunny.
Oh,
now there's a bunny and a hedgehog.
That's Neo. The bunny used to always be hanging out like right out by our driveway, and every night when me and Sarah would pull in the car, it'd be like, "Oh, there's a car there! Hop away, hop away, hop away!" And it was almost identical every night. So we figured it was like one of those Matrix glitches.
Uh-huh.
So we named the bunny Neo. So it's Neo the bunny, and our new we don't know if it's a woodchuck or a gopher or what exactly
it
is.
Though. We'll
name it Caddyshack.
No.
And the two ducks, if they come back again, we'll name them too. But we have a regular old nature preserve in the backyard right now. Anyway.
I'm really enjoying this. I live where I can see a panoramic view of the city of Chicago, and like, I really liked it when I first lived there, but now I've lived there for 7 years, so this is more interesting to me.
But basically, as a interesting topic to discuss and to prove that there are things in the entertainment world that I actually do dislike, I asked Carrie to think of the worst movie she has ever seen, and to talk about it. And then I want to talk about the worst movie I've ever seen. I actually have two, but one definitely wins over the other.
I didn't think about it very hard, but luckily. Bill and Moonbeam mentioned a really stinker, because Luke wanted me to think of ones that I didn't see in the MST3K type of context. So one of those ones that's a true stinker is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is a really, really terrible, terrible, horrible movie. And along a similar vein, although I know some people really enjoyed it, Across the Universe is a pretty fucking terrible movie. It's not one of the worst movies I've ever seen, but it's terrible. And I know I've seen a lot of other bad movies, but I think I've put a lot of them out of my mind. And as far as MST3K movies, Monster Go-Go is right up there as one of the worst. But there's so many bad ones. There's just so many god-awful movies out there. So, what's your list?
My top two... worst movies ever are both movies that I was forced to watch because of the girl I was dating at the time.
Oh.
And oddly enough, they're both the same from the same girl. The one that wins for me I'll give you the number two. The number two is a movie that many people, you know, film. You know, snooty people who be like, oh, yes, I'm only into the fine arts and blah, 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 blah. It's a movie they all hold dear, and I just really disliked it a lot, was Harold and Maude.
I thought you were going to say The Graduate. I was going to have to kill you.
No.
No, I haven't actually seen Harold and Maude, so I can't comment.
Now, so basically, Harold and Maude, Harold is this teenage boy, he's in high school, and he's always trying to get attention from his, you know, family or people in his life by doing all these fake suicide attempts. And, like, you know, if I remember correctly, he was, like, from a well-to-do family. So it's like, you know, he had tons of money and stuff, but he was always faking his own suicide. And, like, those were, like really great, funny moments in the movie. It's like I've always said that if we took all the parts where he fakes his suicides, cut those out and turn it into, like, a 12-minute short film, like, it would be super hilarious and awesome, you know. But, you know, it's all spread out. And then, like, so Harold meets this old woman named Maud, and, you know, they start hanging out a lot. And then about, you know, whatever, two-thirds of the way through the movie...
Squirrel.
I see a bunny! I see a bunny!
We like spring in this part of the country.
Yes. So, anyway, so two-thirds of the way through the movie, Harold and Maude have sex with each other, and then, like, suddenly they're in a relationship. And to me, from my point of view, I totally saw this coming. It was obvious. This is where the direction of the story was going. And after the movie, my girlfriend, who made me watch it, was just like, weren't you just so surprised at what happened? And that they, you know,
so
did that.
See,
and
I'm their, like, names are in the title, Harold and Maude, and yeah, they were friends for the first two thirds.
Yeah, and like, and he's a teenage boy, and she's an old woman.
Oh,
and they have
really
sex.
Unpredictable.
So yeah, so basically, she's like, you know, I was just so shocked when I saw it. And I'm just like, you know, so it just, you know, as Mishki once said, it didn't hold much truck with me.
Look at, he's all perched up, all cute.
Oh,
this is, like, so boring for the listeners.
Thank you for tuning into the Gopher Distraction Podcast. Next week we'll have some ducks fly in and...
Oh yeah, the ducks. You posted the picture of the ducks.
The ducks are not here right now, but...
yeah, but...
3 weeks we'll be having a platypus on. It'll be great.
I think that wins for the hardest you made me laugh during the podcast.
Because I'm sitting here describing all the stuff, and she's just looking out the window at all the at the bunny and the gopher and the squirrel.
I can multitask.
I know you're listening.
I'm one of those multitaskers.
So, like, you know, you can tell by listening that she's looking at her shirt. Hopefully, you can also tell that she's looking out the window at the moment.
Most likely.
Anyway, so worst movie I've ever seen: Muriel's Wedding.
I've never seen that either.
It's an Australian film.
You mentioned that to me before.
Yeah, and it was... I'll try to give a brief synopsis of it. Basically, Muriel is the main character. She has this rednecky Australian family that's, you know, all horrible and rednecky. And she's kind of, you know, an average-looking woman, not skinny, you know. She happens to have a friend who's, like, tall and skinny and, like, a short... I think she had a short black... So she's, like, you know, a bit more athletic, a bit more what, you know, the Australian guys are trying to, you know, shag with, you know, have a root. So, so it's like, you know, I'm watching this movie, and it just, all these characters are horrible, except for her friend, the skinny chick, and I'm like, okay, maybe there's some redeeming part of this movie through that character. Then about a third of the way through the movie... some weird accident happens with that kid. It wasn't even like an accident. It's just all of a sudden it just magically happened where something happened to her back or her spinal cord or whatever. And suddenly her legs didn't work anymore and she was in a wheelchair.
Lame.
And so it's like, you just took the only thing I liked about this movie, the only character I liked,
and
crippled her. And the other thing is the movie is wall to wall ABBA music. It's
I was just going to say something. I was going to say the movie Mamma Mia is not the worst movie I've ever seen, but it's pretty fucking horrible.
In Mamma Mia, it's one of those concept things where it's like, we've taken a rock group and we've based an entire musical around their songs.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, if you wanna
all right, fine, whatever. At least that's labeled as, if you love ABBA, come see Mamma Mia. It's like, this is like, you know...
If you want to see plasticky Meryl Streep getting it on with plasticky Pierce Brosnan, then you pick the right movie in Mamma Mia. Ugh, sure.
But it's like, there weren't any, like, musical numbers in Muriel's Wedding, but it was the kind of thing where, like, all of a sudden they would, like, ABBA music would be playing, and there'd be, like, some artistic, like, shot of, like, half of the main character's face, and then her other friend in the background, as they would, like, you know, ABBA lyrics, ah, pose, you know, and then, like... And so basically, by the, I don't remember, and of course, she meets a guy somehow in this dysfunctional, you know, shitstorm, and she ends up marrying the guy, hence Muriel's wedding. But basically, by the end of the film, it, the only moral I could, the only message I could get out of it was everybody in Australia is completely, you know, functionally, socially retarded. Like, just, you know, stay away from this country because this is what the people are like. That's the only thing I got from that movie.
Well, it, and it was my understanding that Australia was created as a place to send the convicts and whores from UK. Am I right on that?
Basically, yeah.
As far as I know.
Well, we're going to go buy some binoculars so we can get a better look at the animals in the backyard. And while we're doing that, we're going to play another song. So coming up right now is a song. Wow, it's hard to believe this is a 10-year-old song. Look out on tour this summer. Weird Al Yankovic is coming back. So here he is with a tune from his album Running with Scissors. Here we go.
In that record store, she says the way he grinds his molars is really sexy. She thinks he's so darn dysfunctional and Generation X-y. She likes his brooding angst and his wild-eyed stare. Yeah, he's a very favorite slacker, multimillionaire. Well, my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. She's all crazy about that Eddie Vedder. Once she was mine, but now I better just forget her, cause my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. Now every time I see him, well, he looks so grim. I guess it really must suck to be a rock star like him. What a pain in the butt to have so much success. Spending all his time open and avoiding the press. But my girl can't get enough of his sullen demeanor. Like he's some big torture genius and I'm some kind of wiener. While my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. She's got a thing for that Eddie Vedder. Tell me what can he do that I can't do better. Now my baby's in love with a, I said my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. Head over heels for that Eddie Vedder. I can't believe it, now she's knitting him a sweater, cause my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. I knew we were heading for disaster when she caught me hanging out at the Ticketmaster. Now she's got an unrequited adoration for the frustrated, agitated, designated, alienated spokesman for the disaffected Grinch generation. Well, I don't wear Doc Martens and I don't wear flannel, and I don't boycott the music video channel, and I just can't compete with all that money and fame. But I don't too can play this kind of game. Yeah, well, let's just see how jealous she'll get when I start stalking Alanis Morissette. Well, my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. She's all crazy about that Eddie Vedder. Once she was mine, but now I better just forget her, cause my baby's in love with her. I said my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder. Why'd she have to fall for that Eddie Vedder? If she wants to leave me, I guess I better let her, cause my baby's in love with an Eddie Vedder.
And now it's time for
News of the Stupid!
Created by Devo Spices at DevoSpice.com, compiled by roving reporter Carrie Whitney, and submitted by fans like you.
Word.
I guess it's stupid to prove it innocent, cause it's making soda needs to incriminate. Can we incarcerate?
Matthew Clemens, age 21, of Cherry Hill, New Jersey, attended a Philadelphia Phillies game with some friends. When one of his friends was kicked out for unruly behavior, he chose a rather interesting way to express his dissatisfaction by vomiting on an off-duty police captain and his 11-year-old daughter. "It was the most vile, disgusting thing I've ever seen," Vangelo said Friday. "He has two fingers down his throat, he lunges forward and vomits on myself and my 11-year-old." Vangelo said he tried to push his children safely behind him, and Clements punched him in the face. Four or five fans in the next section rushed to help. They held him until police arrived, someone punching Clements in the face as he tried to break free. He was taken to jail and held on $36,000 bail. I'm sure while this Jersey boy waits for his buddies to pay his bail, he'll experience in Philadelphia's brotherly love.
This next story is about two landfill workers who take recycling seriously. In Columbia, Missouri, Shepherd's Distributing Company sent 1,500 cases of expired Budweiser and Michelob Ultra beer to the landfill to be disposed of. Not wanting to let all of that frosty brew go to waste, the landfill workers pulled up a city vehicle to the landfill and hauled off about 50 cases of the expired beer. Security cameras captured the following audio the day of the incident.
"Yeah, what's gonna happen if this plan don't work, eh?
The old man will boot us out of the house and we'll have no place to sleep."
"Yeah, I could live in this van, eh? I don't need no
place.
Take
off. You need money to live or you'll starve."
"Well, this plan sucks. I ain't going in."
"You are too. I'll tell the old man you gave away his beer money."
"Okay, okay. You boss me around."
Police and city supervisors are trying to determine if the salvage was a crime, theft of city property, or just a policy violation. In either case, sometimes being green can leave some people turning green.
In Maryland, Cecil County Sheriff's deputies said the owner of a BP convenience store in Northeast was opening up Wednesday morning when he spotted a pair of feet dangling from a duct. Deputies responded and freed a 20-year-old man who had removed a ventilation cover and crawled through the vent before getting stuck. When asked why he crawled in the duct, the man told officers that he was playing hide-and-seek. He claimed that he and a group of other adults had climbed onto the roof of the BP and decided to play a game of hide-and-seek. He chose to hide in the ventilation system. When the other players couldn't figure out where he was, they stopped looking for him. The man's friends were unavailable for comment since they were all engaged in a session of Ring Around the Rosie, with the exception of one man who was hospitalized with a severe case of cooties.
And finally, in East Lansing, Michigan, a 19-year-old university student faces possible theft charges for taking 79 items, all of the items being women's thongs. Police have been investigating since March 22nd when someone reported the theft of 15 pairs of panties from an MSU dorm basement laundry room. Another student spotted the suspect taking some thongs from a dryer and reported it. The man told police it was a prank and denied having a sex addiction. Police released the student, but one victim wants to file charges. Ingham County prosecutors must decide if he will be charged. They must also decide at which location to hold the trial. They're just not sure under where. As to the whereabouts of the stolen items, it's sad to say, as of today, no panties have been thrown. People are stupid, and once again, they have proven it. This has been News of the Stupid. I'm glad we got that Paul and Storm joke in there. I was adamant about that.
Okay.
So now's the part where we are going to discuss the Twitters. I was really...
I'm all Twitter-pated about it. Get it? God, I'm amusing!
We are peeking out like nuts. Oh, I meant to insert a slow clap there. Sorry. There you go. There you go. All right, about a month ago or so, I entered the contest to try to win the chance to meet Conan O'Brien on Twitter, which involved following the American Express Twitter account and then tweeting a very specific tweet. And then everyone who did those two things was entered into the contest. And I was kind of thinking of it as it was like you were going to get to have dinner with them or something, like... So I got Josh to enter the contest, and I got Ken to enter the contest, and assuming that they would be taking me if they happened to win. The winner was no one that I knew, but it turned out to just be a ticket to the live show of Conan O'Brien and a meet and greet pass. So, and not as exciting. I would have probably still entered, but I'm not sure I would have pressured Ken and Josh to do it. So I have to say, you know, I'm guilty of the behavior that I'm complaining about, but it seems like lately there's so many goddamn people entering contests on Twitter that it's like you can't see anything else on there half the time. And this is like coming from someone. I am a follower of someone who won an iPad from the Dig contest. One of the 14 winners on there is someone that I follow. And yet, I just find it really irritating, and it's kind of driving me nuts. Any thoughts on that issue?
I guess the people I'm following aren't super going crazy with stuff like that, so it hasn't really cluttered up my page too much.
You're fortunate on that. It's exasperated. I think I entered an extra B in there, and then I couldn't get it out of there. Mm-hmm. So we'll just go with exasperated. By the fact that I pretty much depend solely on Twitter Mobile because I'm fucking never home. And now Twitter Mobile will only let me see back one page older than the most recent page. And then when I try to click on to get to the second, you know, to the third page, it brings me back to the first page. So I'm always missing shit. Mm. So, you know, half the time it's like I can only see two pages of shit at a time, and it's mostly contests or picks or random links, all kinds of things that I can't click on. So, you know, more content in your tweets, folks. And remember, Bad Rapport has a Twitter account, and it's @BadRapport, all one word, and you can tweet things at us, because I notice every time I log into that, like, one person ever has tweeted our name, ever. We haven't even tweeted. Neither Carrie Dalby nor the great Luke Ski has ever used the @BadRapport in one of our tweets.
Yeah, I have.
Well, it doesn't show up when you go and you're logged in on the Bad Rapport Twitter and you go click on @BadRapport. Like one guy's thing from like 6 weeks ago shows up.
Huh. Well, it's time for me to announce the Bad Rapport Twitter contest. What you need to do is go to your Twitter and type in "I like gophers," and then do it, you know, every 5 minutes all day. And then
do a hashtag "I like gophers."
Yeah.
Actually, Josh was doing a thing this morning where he was trying to declaim it. April 20th is the International Glob of Toothpaste on the Sink Day. And I said, it only counts if there's a hashtag of Twitter, Glob of Toothpaste Day, and that there's multiple people using that hashtag. And I only saw one person retweet his claim, but everybody knows April 20th is Token Up Day anyway. So, I also forgot that I was going to make an announcement. It's not so much an announcement as I'm telling you something and other people are listening in.
Okay.
Josh got a new job.
Yay!
He's going to be working downtown. He's going to be probably taking the Metra or L trains to get to his job. So, you know, I'll have Josh's car that he's working so hard to pay off. I'll probably be the one who's driving it the majority of the time. So probably at least half or more often than that of the time when we do the show, I will probably not need a ride home or here.
Yay!
Luke likes that.
I like that a lot. Okay, so time for song origins. Carrie put out the word that she wants people to, you know, suggest things that she should talk about. And there's more bunnies.
Multiple bunnies or just one bunny?
Oh, that might be the same bunny. Okay. So we have heard your call. We have made the notes. She doesn't want to do all of them in one episode, so we're going to start.
There's a lot of them.
Yes.
And I don't have a lot of songs.
So take it away, Carrie. Song origins.
Okay, well, Hedwig Robinson is my first song, comedy music song, that I ever wrote and first one that I ever recorded. excuse me, it was recorded on December 26th, 2005.
Wow, you remember that well.
Well, yeah, I remember it was the day after Christmas and we were in Jared Ringgold's basement and we also recorded I Love You, TiVo there. And I remember that day because it's my ex-boyfriend Randy's birthday. So that also makes it easier to remember. That's also Boxing Day, of course.
Would that be Randy Porter of Smitecast fame?
Yes, that would be Randy Porter of the now it's called Mystery Ticket Radio podcast, but he changes his podcast.
I thought it was the Gopher Distraction podcast.
Crazy Like a Snake, actually. Wait, trying to think of some of the other names. I can't even keep up with.
Anyway, Hedwig Robinson.
He changes his podcast names more often than he changes his underwear. Hedwig Robinson is basically, I was walking from work to the gas station and it kind of popped into my head to parody Mrs. Robinson and make it about Hedwig and the Angry Inch, since the character's full name is actually Hedwig Robinson, which the character gets her last name from, interesting side note, the character gets her last name from her ex-husband Luther Robinson, and I just found out today Luther Robinson is the birth name of the vaudeville legend Bojangles.
Oh, wow.
So that's where they got the name Luther Robinson for Hedwig. Little known fact. Anyways, I kind of mulled it over for a while because I was like, am I writing a parody song because I want to write and record a parody song? Or am I writing a parody song because I want to impress the comedy musician that I'm in love with? And I decided I was doing it for all the right reasons. In all honesty, you know, actually, I don't know if it was the first one I wrote, but it's definitely the first one I recorded. Anyways, so, you know, I worked long and hard on the lyrics. I tried to go by the Luke Ski formula of songwriting, taking songs that you like and making them about things that you like. I don't think I got any extraneous pop culture references in there, though, which would make it not quite follow the formula. But then I got my dad to come over to Jared Ringgold's basement to record the guitar, and then I recorded the vocals. I think the vocals are a one-take wonder. And then later on, we added in the sound bites, and then it became a song.
Woot.
And the other one is the story is much shorter. The song called I Really Did Go to School Naked. Well, I didn't actually ever go to school naked. I just have that dream on occasion, as I think everybody has. And I decided to make it into a song where I pretended that it really happened. And I got Rick Hagedorn to record the piano for me, and then I recorded the vocal. And, you know, I managed to explain to Rick kind of what I wanted, and, you know, he managed to interpret it correctly, and that became a song. I always kind of imagine myself performing it in a skirt made out of folders and rubber bands, but I decided not to because I didn't want to steal Luke's shtick, because at that time, anyways, I don't know if he's doing it so much now, but at that time he had a lot of costumes and props in his performances, and I was like, well, I'd rather be the person that just stands there and sings. Also due to laziness and being cheap. So, use the force, Luke.
Yes. So the story behind Use the Force, it is a parody of a song called Give It Up by Public Enemy. It was the lead single from one of their albums. Actually, I can tell you what the name of that album is. It's right over here in my CDs that are organized.
He has a gigantic CD collection.
Oh, yes.
Well, not so much as some people I know. My ex-boyfriend Jeff Gamlin had over 7,000 CDs.
Shoebox's CD collection is definitely bigger than mine, but he's probably the only person, well, I don't know, maybe my brother JT, maybe Michael. But yeah, anyway, the point is,
7,000 is a lot of CDs.
So there was a CD put out by Public Enemy in the year 1994 called, it basically it's Music and Our Message, but they spell it Muse Sick N Our Mess Age. They were trying to make a point because they're all political and stuff.
Use sick in our mess age.
Use sick in our mess age. So anyway, the song is called Give It Up. And for some reason, I got it in my head that would be a good song to parody. It kind of wasn't, but at the time I thought it was. And I had, you know, basically I was doing parodies about Star Wars before doing parodies about Star Wars was cool. Back in, you know, 94, 95, when I was first starting out, I wrote YODA, I wrote Star Wars Trilogy Homesick Blues. I was, you know, doing my best to get on the Dr. Demento show and, you know, struggling to, you know, doing home recordings. They weren't good enough. I went to Pro Studio, finally started creating some stuff that was good enough to get in the Dr. Demento show. And at the time when I was performing at conventions, Star Wars Trilogy Homesick Blues and YODA were both just killing. Everyone loved them. Everyone went apeshit for them. Like, YODA was a big hit for me in my very early career. And I was dying for Dr. Demento to play it so that it would become a hit on his show.
Ever played it?
He finally played it once, you know, once the version that was on Carpe Dementia came out, and I basically specifically asked him if he'd be willing to play it, I think is what I did, that eventually got it on the air in one of his, all, you know, like when the theme of the week was Star Wars. So, you know, so like in 97, I'm there, you know, desperately trying to get a new Star Wars song on there because, like, you know, these songs have been around for a couple of years. They're really popular. The remakes or the re-releases of Star Wars Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi were just about to come out in 97. You know, the album Fanboys in the Hood, the first cassette version, the digital recorded version, was in, you know, October 96. And I'm just like, come on, Dr. D, do this. I really want to have a big hit, a big Star Wars song, because my name is Luke. I've been named Luke since 1974. I've had this Star Wars monkey on my back since age 3. If anyone deserves to have a hit comedy song that has to do with Star Wars, it's me. For the love of God, Dr. Demento, play one of these songs. You know, more the one that seemed to be a bigger chance for a hit was YODA. And then Mark Jonathan Davis had to put out Star Wars Cantina. And that was the song that got to be the big Star Wars related hit, you know, that year.
Yeah.
Like back in like 97.
You're not bitter.
And it just bugged me. It's like, Doc, I've been pushing to you to play this song since 95. I followed all your instructions. I'm, you know, finally doing stuff that's good enough to get in the air. Why won't you give the song a chance? I go to conventions and people laugh and cheer and love this song. Why won't you play it? So it bummed me out that, you know, basically that year, you know, I lost the contest that only existed in my own head of who's going to have the most popular Star Wars related comedy song of 1997. I lost. Now, I'm
probably in only your head.
Yes.
Everyone on planet Earth.
Yes. Like I said, since age 3, I've been dealing with this Star Wars thing, and this was one way for me to own that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, also in 1997, there was the song Insane in the Brain, which was the number 7 song on the year in the Funny 25, which was also a huge, you know, first big landmark victory for me on the Dr. Demento show. So I was happy with that, but still I kind of felt like I had something to prove. So 1999, it's like, all right, episode 1 is coming. Everybody and their grandmother is going to create a song about episode 1. I want to be the first person to get Dr. Demento a song about this movie who actually saw it and didn't, you know, base it on just the trailer. Yeah, who didn't base it on just seeing the trailer, who didn't base it on internet rumors, that actually saw it. So I had decided the song Give It Up by Public Enemy would be a good song to, you know, parody and make it like, you know, use the force, use the force, use the force, use the force, what, you know.
Yeah.
And do that. So that, you know, like I said, it was probably not a good song to pick because it wasn't a mainstream hit. I mean, it was a hit on Yo MTV Raps and on, you know, those countdowns. You know, I should have picked a different song, but at the time I was not able to see that.
I seem to remember you mentioning this as the one song out of your entire body of work where you kind of forced a parody.
It's the best example of a forced parody in my work, probably, without you know, having the time to get analytical about it.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what I call a forced parody, where two things don't go together, yet you force them to go together. It's like, what's really popular? Twilight. Oh, what's really popular in music?
Bieber.
You know, Keisha's TikTok. It's like, all right, I will write a song called Vamp Wolf to the tune of TikTok, and I will make these two ideas fit whether or not they should go together, you know.
Yeah.
And there's
this is how a lot of parodies actually sound.
Yeah.
Very forced together.
Yeah. So, you know, but
I'm sure some of mine sound that way.
Again, I was in denial and desperate to prove something to myself and win this contest that I only existed in my own head. And so basically, I talked Blasted Bill Putt into coming out and hanging out with me the weekend episode one came out, and we saw the midnight showing. quick side note: we finally got to sit down in the theater waiting for the midnight showing to start, and they were showing all those slides. Like, it was before they had the video thing, and it was just slides of things, you mm-hmm. know, like ads for whatever. And then one came on that said, like in small letters, "What happens without advertising?" And then in gigantic letters, "Nothing!" with an exclamation point. So he and me and Bill are sitting there, and all of a sudden this thing comes on, and I look at it and I say, "Nothing! Absolutely not!" And like, he, as quickly as you just did, he started saying it with, "Stupid! You're so stupid!" And like, the whole audience like cheered and was like, "Yay! That was awesome!" So you know, we saw episode one at midnight. Went back to my place, went to sleep, got up, went back to the theater, watched it two more times that day.
Wow.
So the first three possible showings of episode one, I saw, and I think by the third viewing, I actually had a notebook and I was taking notes. Daniel Robinson, my music maker, had already made the background track for that song. I had already committed myself to that. So I went back, you know, and basically spent all the rest of that day sitting down and writing out the lyrics to the song. And then, so this would be like, you know, it came out at midnight, went to see it twice, wrote the song the following morning,
yeah.
Met up at Daniel's place, and I recorded Use the Force with Daniel and with Bill Putt hanging out there, and that's why Bill gets a vocal cameo in there going, you know, "Shut your mouth!"
Yeah.
You know, because he happened to be there. And doing the hand claps, which was interesting too. It's like, he's like, "No, tempo, it goes like this, guys," you know.
Oh, yeah. That was fun trying to get Josh to do hand claps on Dear Brittany. I was like, "Okay, fine, you go away, I'll do them all myself." And I had to, like, multiple track my own hands clapping for Dear Brittany.
So, you know, we got the song done. We turned it into probably a DAT tape, because I don't think maybe he had his own burner by then. I don't know. Probably not. You know, whatever version we did, a digital version of the song, dropped it in the mail, you know, express overnighted it to Dr. Demento, so that basically, you know, in less than 72 hours of episode one being released, I had a song to Dr. Demento written from the point of view of someone who actually saw the film and knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Dr. Demento never played that song, I don't think. Actually, let me double check before I get all high and mighty about it.
Well, it's not exactly your best song.
I know, .org. This is only take it. So let me just use Jeff Morris's awesome...
Use the Force.
Oh, wait, he did play it. I take that back. I'm wrong.
What is this?
$6.20.99. Okay. Okay, I'm rewriting my own history based on my yeah. Bullshit.
Twice.
So okay. He June 13th of 99, he played Use the Force. June 20th, a week later, it was number four. It was number four on the Funny Five.
Ah.
And that was it. And then shortly after that, The Saga Begins came out. Not to mention Mark Jonathan Davis doing his The Phantom Medley, which was a bunch of random Star Wars little... Because that was the thing. Mark Jonathan Davis...
also now known as
Richard Cheese. He did, you know, the whole... It was a Barry Manilow parody, and, you know, I'm not sure how... basically, he wanted to make money off of the song Star Wars Cantina, but he couldn't get Barry Manilow's people to sign off on it in a way that he could release it like Weird Al does nationally, you know, to make money off of it. So when he wanted to do a song about Episode One, he basically grabbed a whole bunch of public domain songs, like She's Been Come Around the Mountain When She Comes, and Hallelujah, and like, you know, basically did a bunch of like 10-second mini things mentioning all these various Star Wars things, most of them having nothing to do with Episode One.
I don't even remember hearing this.
But yeah, he called it the Phantom Medley. So that was his way to try to capitalize off of the popularity of Star Wars Cantina and have a song that was supposedly about Episode One when it really kind of totally wasn't.
And then later he went the other direction and he capitalized off of the popularity of making lounge music.
Yeah.
But he did it all covers.
It's like, yeah, like
so
doing.
You didn't have to ask permission.
Getting legal clearances for covers is easier than parodies when it comes to trying to make the type of living Weird Al is making.
Yeah.
So anyway, so once again, last 99, I lost the contest that existed only in my own head.
Yes.
Didn't even try for Episode Two. I was so let down. Although I did make the song Because I'm Jedi, which I think is a pretty darn funny song.
It's worthy. It's better than Use the Force.
But then came a wonderful lady by the name of Carrie Dalby and didn't have the number one song of the year that year, like, you know, like Stealing Like a Hobbit and Peter Parker, but god damn it, I had the number one Star Wars related song the year Episode 3 came out. My last chance in the universe to win the contest that I existed in my own head. Boom! Nick Adams and Carrie Dalby joined forces and helped me pull off something that will, you know, make my therapy, you know, that much less.
You're welcome.
You know, yes.
That was the
indeed.
First song I ever recorded, Vader Boy.
Yeah, so that was the number four song of the year in 99, so.
Number four song of the year in 2005. Yes.
Yeah.
2005.
Yeah.
So, now you have to, maybe we could do that at another time.
Do what at another time?
I don't know.
This
one of those things. I don't know.
Well, let me at least do this because I have that thing queued up.
Okay.
All right. Another song origin, even though it's not a song, it's a sketch. On the Cirque du So What albums, I have these three sketches in which I am impersonating Gilbert Gottfried selling interesting products. And the origin of that, besides the fact that, you know, Gilbert for, you know, a long time was a regular staple in my act of him impersonating him, you know, doing various wacky things.
He's a regular staple in your stable of impersonations.
Yes, exactly. I haven't used Gilbert nearly as much in the past few years. I mean, I brought him back for the Keanu Brada Nikto thing. But other than that, I kind of have just left him, like, a brief thing, like, you know, I ate some bacon, some of the mix came out wrong. So that it was just like, oh, look, aha, kind of Where's Waldo in audio format.
But he used to be, like, your alter ego.
Yeah, to some degree. So in the summer of 05, I think that sounds about right, I was dating someone who is still a friend, Holly, the lovely wife of Earl Lucas. But back then she was single and I was single and I dated her. It was kind of tough because I lived in Madison, she lived in the Twin Cities, but it was, you know, still a lovely experience. And hanging out with her.
As long as we're revealing people we used to date, I used to date Earl.
Yes.
And it's, now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
It's the incest distraction hour.
I don't know if people are supposed to know that, but
well,
they, I fucking know that.
They know now.
It's called a dork love square because you and I used to date. I used to date Earl. You used to date Holly, and now Holly and Earl are married.
Yes,
it's called a dork love square. Anyways.
Is that anything like Parisi Squares from Star Trek The Next Generation? Anyway, it's like I had been hanging out with her, and you know, I was doing the Gilbert voice all the time and stuff, and I had come up with this like notion of weird commercials that Gilbert was doing, and you know, kind of improvising them with her, and she was laughing. So when you know the secret online, you know, meetings of and organizations of this, hey, me and Devo Spice and Shoebox, we're going to do a sketch comedy thing. Let's start a Google group. Let's start saving up all these ideas. So back then, I wrote in 2005 these three sketches where I'm Gilbert pretending to sell whatever, you know, wacky products. And in fact, if I'm remembering correctly, exit 234B, which Gilbert mentions, I believe was the exit I had to take off of 94 to get to where Holly was living at the time those were written. So anyway, you know, those were stored away. You know, we, you know, procrastinators of the apocalypse, we, you know, kept building up, and, you know, years went by, and then finally, hey, 2010 is here, we're finally going to get together and record this stuff. So, you know, written in 2005, recorded, released 2010, these three Gilbert sketches. So I'm going to play the first of the three right now because, well, there's a reason for it. Here is the first of those three Gilbert commercial sketches.
Hey, lady! What the hell is wrong with your feet? They look disgusting! They look like chainsaw sculptures by a half-blind epileptic in a coal mine! And your toenails! I didn't know puke was a Revlon polish color! You want to cover those cloven hooves up and do a favor to all the preschoolers you see crying on the sidewalk every day when you walk your gay-ass chihuahua? Well, then you need to come on down to Gilbert's Basket of Shoes. Yes, at Gilbert's Basket of Shoes, I got a basket full of shoes. And I'm selling them direct to you for prices so low that you think I dug these out of the dumpster behind Payless, which I didn't. This week only, buy two shoes, get the third shoe free. Unbelievable! I got all kinds of shoes in sizes like 8.5 and 9. So come on down to Gilbert's Basket of Shoes. Just take exit 234B. You'll see me at the bottom holding a basket full of shoes. So come on down and buy some shoes today, you Sasquatch freak.
Okay, well, that was that was Gilbert's Basket of Shoes by Cirque du Soleil, featuring me as Gilbert. So, Carrie, as long as you're standing and stretching, walk over here because you need to see this. Because,
okay.
like I said, written in 2005, sat around for years, recorded in 2010. Then, just the other day. Chris Mazzalesta tells me of a commercial he's been seeing airing in his area for a new product. This is real, and this is the real Gilbert. So check this shit out.
Bending over to put your shoes on is a backbreaking chore. One wrong step, you could end up on the floor. And trying to get them off can hurt even more. Well, now there's Shoedini, the world's first shoe horn that lets you get your shoes on and off with ease. Shoedini has a telescoping handle that gives you the reach you need so you can slip your shoes on without bending over. And unlike regular shoe horns, Shoedini has a patented grip clip that holds your shoe in place while you take it off. Just slide it in and slip them off. Shoedini works with all your shoes. You can even use them on sneakers. And just look how easy it is to put on and take off dress shoes, even when they're laced up. No more wrinkled clothes trying to get your shoes on. No more scuffing and damaging your shoes trying to get them off. Shoedini is perfect for anyone with arthritis or back pain, especially those with limited mobility. Plus, the grip clip lets you pick up your shoes off the floor without bending over. So stop bending and struggling with your shoes every day and get them on and off the easy way. Get Shoedini right this second. Come on, please. It's not just a shoehorn. It's a shoehorn on a stick.
So call and get your...
Oh my God.
How similar are my bits to that?
Eerily. Except yours is funnier, but
It's not just a shoehorn. It's a shoehorn on a stick.
Oh, well, my God. What if you drop the fucking shoehorn? And then you'll like, bend over to try to get it, and then it'll be a Life Alert commercial or whatever that thing is called.
But just think about that sat, you know, in our little computer Google base, you know, cocooning since 2005. And then I put this out, and then less than 2 months later, there's this commercial.
Someone hacked your computer or something.
Yeah, man. So
that's
anyway.
That's weird. That's eerie.
Well, I really want to do this stuff, so I could cut some of this other...
Just do it.
All right. Because you know what? I didn't say this at the beginning. I meant to. You know what episode this is?
Episode number 13.
It's episode 13, so it's got to be chock full of Luke Ski-tastic stuff.
We need to start saying our episode numbers at the beginning.
Yeah,
we like forget. Like they do on the Scope. And we need to like copy lots of other things from the Scope, too. And other podcasts. We're not doing enough ripping off.
Well, we've ripped off Hall and Storm in this podcast already, so...
Okay.
All right. This also kind of ties into our, you know, week, you know, the recurring segment that we sometimes do, What Would We Do If?
Yes.
Over the weekend, I did one of the What Would I Do If things that I have been meaning to do for a very, very long time. As you have seen often, it's like, oh... I have a bag of stuff I take with me all the time, and in that bag of stuff is always a notebook. And in that notebook, I'm always writing ideas, lyrics, sketches, ideas, you know, doodles, like whatever is going on with me creatively.
Yes.
You know, I always have to have the running sketchbook thing. I have sketchbooks that I still have, because I keep track of this stuff, that go all the way back to high school for me.
Wow.
So... what I did is, something I've been wanting to do, is go through the notebooks, starting from the point at which I started making music, and find every time I made a list of song ideas.
Yeah.
And then, from, you know, look through, and if it was an idea that never got done, to start a list of all of the song ideas I never did.
Yeah.
And I that's what I did in my downtime at my caricature stuff over the weekend, which is go through it all and make this master list. And let me show you here if I can find it here in my current one. Yeah. So,
oh my God,
about 90 ideas.
Holy crap!
Dating all the way back to summer of 1994. Through now. So I have a big list of 90 different song ideas that I had and never did. Some of them I never did because ultimately they really weren't that great. But, you know, I've been wanting to go through this and just, you know, chronicle it, you know, to kind of seek out those diamonds in the rough that got left behind. I mean,
I love your columns. Title, a parody of what and what it's about. And some of the songs, the what it's about has a question mark. He doesn't even remember what it was about.
Actually, that's what I wanted to say. The ones where I completely, literally do not remember what the idea was. Well, let me just go. This is just kind of things that, you know, that I thought you and the listeners who are fans of mine might find interesting. I considered, instead of doing, you know, the parody of What's Up Doc, Can We Rock about Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
I had considered making that song about Animaniacs.
Oh.
And it would have been called What's Up Dot.
Oh, God.
So, I mentioned...
What's Up Spock is too awesome, though.
Yeah. I had mentioned this in the past, doing a Spike Jonze Doodles Weaver-style piece about the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yes.
And, you know, that idea is never coming back. There's that song by Busta Rhymes, Woo-ha! Got you all in check. That was kind of his first big splash.
I don't even remember that.
I was considering doing that, parodying that song about the Muppets in some way. Like, Manamana, Muppet Show, something, you know, and didn't work. I saw this title on several lists with no other annotations as to if it was a parody or an original or what the whole idea was about. The title says, Talking Politicians.
Okay.
I have no memory of what that idea was. It showed up on several lists. I'm like, what was this idea? So
somewhere in the recesses of your brain, it still exists.
Because yeah.
Technically, I think we don't ever forget anything. It's just every memory is in our brain somewhere.
So
we should do some hypnosis on you to find out.
So Rocky Horror Picture Show, Mystery Science Theater 3000. Back before I did the things that I actually did, my original ideas were to do a parody of the theme song to Mystery Science Theater 3000 about the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and then do a parody of the Time Warp about Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Okay.
And I was going to call them Rocky Horror 3000 and the Tom Warp, as in Tom Servo.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I considered trying to do a mashup crossover of Manamana and Mbop by Hanson. There was a song idea written down that said, "The coolest t-shirt ever made." I vaguely have an idea of what that song was supposed to be, but it ultimately, it's like, forget it. There's an idea I wrote down, Adam Sandler and Fitch, which I think was really just me singing the Abercrombie and Fitch song, but just singing it as Adam Sandler does his, you know, like, "No kids on the block, on a bunch of hits," you know, so that's a lame. I had a song title called Ego Trippin'. I don't remember.
Well, now you have a DVD called The Ego Has Landed, and
yes.
I think that's a better title.
Yeah. Remember I did the Star Trek themed disc and the Star Wars themed disc and the cartoon themed disc? I had considered doing a other science fiction that's not Star Trek and Star Wars disc, and I was going to call that disc Babylon Dynamite, and I wanted to make a sketch for that disc that was a cross between Babylon 5 and Napoleon Dynamite.
Okay.
Never got around to it. I was going, or actually this was Stephanie's idea, was to have my song about 24 be a parody of the song It's the End of the World and We Know It, which would have been a really good idea. It would have made sense, have been a good idea, but just somehow at the time I felt like, no, I want to go with the original hip-hop thing. And then Insane Ian, of course, did his parody of that song about heroes, so somebody got around to it. So here's the bonus cheddar for all of you out there. Upon doing all this research and listing, I came across the lyrics to songs I wrote that never got recorded and probably never got heard by anybody. And I'm going to perform them right now. So, let's see.
Surprise, surprise. No, I didn't know he was going to do this.
Yes. This one...
let me wake up here. Come on, right. Wake up, Carrie.
This song is a parody of a song that's very down-tempo. I'm going to sing it much faster, or else this will go on forever and not be worth it.
Okay.
So, cold wind blows through Chicago, home of Da Bears. A good man that made us laugh, a sheep of black. I thought we'd get to see more pratfalls. A tear falls from David Spade. It's so hard to say goodbye to Chris Farley. I don't know what he did to calm his demons. All I know is fat guy in a little coat. If we get to see his unseen films, I know laughter dulls the pain. It's so hard to say goodbye to Chris Farley. Now that van down by the river will never more house Matt Foley. It's so hard, sang by Chris Farley. He was this generation's Belushi, but he didn't deserve to get the title that way. It's so hard to say goodbye to Chris Farley.
Here.
So that song was kind of done, like,
That's how you dealt with your mourning.
Yeah.
As a fan. Okay.
I mean, it was kind of half sincere, half snarky, but, you know, that was that at the time. Yeah. By the way, quick asterisk here, because I have to assume DJ Particle is listening. Do not list these songs on on the Mad Music Dementia Top 20. at least not now. If we put out like the best of Luke and Carrie's Bad Report and these songs end up on it, fine, then you can put them in the countdown. For now, these are just exclusives for the Bad Report listeners, who are our close personal friends who we all love.
Okay.
It's just for them.
And you had two others you were going to sing?
Two others.
He's pulling out all the old specific notebooks. One of them has a bunch of Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd stickers and stuff. This one has Weird Al backstage passes all over it.
And it's related. I'll just sing the song and then explain later. Oh, my baby, she don't want me no more. Ever since she heard Eat It back in 84. She says the domain weirdal.com is quite amazing. And the way he handles his sticks really gets her heart a-racing. She likes his deep brown eyes and his dark brown hair. Yeah, he's her favorite drummer, webmaster extraordinaire. Well, my baby's in love with John Bermuda. She's all crazy about that John Bermuda. I asked why, she said, because he's a righteous dude, duh. My baby's in love with John Bermuda. Now, every time I see him, he's out shaking hands. With a smile and a smirk, he's meeting, greeting the fans. What a pain in the butt to take on dual roles. Watch him keeping the tempo and destroying the trolls. But my girl can't get enough, and it hurts my pride. 'Cause now the symbols of her love have Zildjian written on the side. Well, my baby's in love with John Bermuda. She's got a thing for that John Bermuda. I might as well pack up and hop a plane to Judah. Now my baby's in love with her. I said, my baby's in love with John Bermuda. Head over heels for that John Bermuda. I'm a small cheese curd, and he's a hunk of Gouda. 'Cause my baby's in love with a John Bermuda. I knew we were headed for disaster when she played that Woodsy Owl song on her shoutcaster. Her infatuation really ain't a mystery for the web-spacing, solo-playing, fan-waving, syncopating drummer from the single greatest cover band in history. Well, I don't know how to make a tambourine jangle, and I'm not tattooed on David Rossi's ankle. And I know she thinks compared to him I am so lame, but I know two can play at this kind of game. Yeah, well, let's just see how jealous she'll get when I start stalking the keyboardist Ruben. Well, my baby's in love with John Bermuda. She's all crazy about that John Bermuda. If I was Jar Jar Binks, I'd say, how's Aruda? 'Cause my baby's in love with her. I said, my baby's in love with John Bermuda. Why'd you have to fall for that John Bermuda? When it comes to the drums, he's a master golden Buddha. 'Cause my baby's in love with a John Bermuda. May the Schwartz be with you.
And also with you. Wait, that's church. By the way, since I've, you know, I've never had backstage passes to Weird Al. I never will, and I'll probably never meet the guy. But I did get to have dinner with John Bermuda Schwartz, because I know this guy over here with the blonde hair and goofy voices. So I that's like my claim to fame, and you know, my only claim to fame in comedy music, or I should say Weird Al fandom.
Yeah, it was a different time back before Al had a wife and a child, when he was a lot more open to the meeting and greeting situation.
Oh, there's still plenty of meeting and greeting. It just doesn't include me.
Yeah. Anyway, so the third one is much shorter. And, I probably should explain what the point of that song was. At the time I wrote that, she was still my fiance, Stephanie. We had a kind of a picnic get together 4th of July weekend, because her birthday is the 3rd of July, and it was just after a bunch of us went to see an Al show. So as a surprise birthday gift to her, I wrote that song and sang it at the party, just as a goof.
Did she like it?
She found it amusing. Okay. I actually talked to her today. I'm like, hey, do you care if I sing this thing on the podcast? She's like, sure, I guess. You know, it's not like I'm ever going to, like, record that in any professional way or put it out. It's kind of, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, so this is much easier to explain. In our attempts to get Ukul the Mach on the Fump, I wrote this when I was visiting Adam in the hopes that me and Adam and Rand could get to a studio and record it so that they could put something on the Fump so that they could have something on the Fump.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened, obviously.
And they've still never been on the Fump.
They still haven't been on the Fump. They've been accepted. Basically, mm-hmm. we're waiting to get music from them, and just like the rest of the world has been waiting for a new Ukul the Mach album. So,
yeah, that'd be nice. They're one of the common music groups, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've been meaning to call Adam and kind of get an update from him and ask him about some other stuff. And I know that they have been working on another album, but it's like I've been saying, it's been taking years. But hopefully it'll be just as kick-ass as their super secret album.
Yeah, which is one of the best albums ever made.
Yeah. So, here we go. Just come on down to thefump.com, where you'll laugh until you split your pants. We got Rob Balder and possible Oscar, but a Grammy, we don't have a chance. We got sudden death in the place to be, with kick-ass rap dementia you could download for free, and some blatant self-promotion from the great Luke Ski, but you expect that anyhow. Down here at the Funny Music Project, also known as The Fump, spelled THEFUMP.com, we got so many comedy songs on MP3 that if you stacked them all up, they'd reach all the way up to, well, nowhere, because it's data and therefore doesn't occupy physical space. What, didn't your daddy learn you nothing? Yes, nothing dissuades the soul-crushing devastation of day-to-day life like a quietly new dementia track like the ones posted twice a week for free at thefump.com by one of our core members, or one of our auxiliary members, like Carrie Dalby, Power Sal, the Robinegian Bard, the Gospels, MC Lars, Powered by Satan, Ukul the Mach, and that one sea monkey we can't seem to keep out of the men's room. So come on down to thefump.com, Raymond Scum, the songs will give you a grin. There's an occasional song from Jonathan Colton, because we stole the whole idea from him. New stuff from Tom Smith does not take long, because he wrote another dozen while we're singing this song. And the latest from Quartet about a sentient thong involving nipples, a well-known network news anchor, and holiday sauce.
Oh, that is old school.
Yes. So there you have it for you hardcore Luke Ski fans. Super rare stuff by me, and that you will probably never hear again unless we put it on a Best of Bad Rapport thing. But the other ulterior motive behind me doing, actually the main motive behind me doing the song list project, like I said, looking for those kind of diamond in the rough songs, I wanted to go through this list and find songs that are still potentially relevant or still potentially worth my effort to record. And what I want to do with them, I don't know exactly when. I'm hoping maybe soon. I got to figure out what the hell's going on with my potential new album coming out in August, if I'm even going to be able to make that happen. But what I'm hoping maybe I'll be able to do is sometime soon, you know, I will do some kind of post. Maybe it'll be audio. Maybe it'll be, you know, on the internet that you read it. You know, I haven't decided which yet. But I want to basically spell out, okay, here's X number of ideas. Here they all are. Here's the basic thing. It's a song about, you know, like, you know, to use... It's a song about Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, to the tune of Give It Up by Public Enemy, and it would be called this, and like just explain the basic premises, play a short clip of the song, you know, if I had, you know, any lyrics for it worked out at all in my head that I could remember, maybe quote that. But basically be like, here's a bunch of ideas from the past that got left behind. Present them to you all, and then basically either as a discussion or as a poll or some combination of the two, say, you guys tell me which of these ideas you want me to do, and whichever song gets the most support, I will create that song and put it on my next album.
My vote goes for the Red Dwarf song.
Well, that song is more towards the... That song's like on the list of songs that's, you know, currently slated. That's not like an idea from way in the past.
I know, but my vote goes, and I know. I'm sure Blasted Bill would make the same vote.
Well, you know, I'm trying to probably... Well, whatever. The point is that, you know, it's. I was thinking of calling it as not that it's really like a contest, but as a online event, calling it "You Pick Luke's Fump."
Oh, okay.
So, you know, because you know, obviously, as well as putting it on the album, I'd post it at the Fump and be like, here's of all the ideas I had from the past, here's the one you guys demanded I make into reality.
Yeah.
So that's what the big deal is about that, and I know this show is very long, but, you know, it's
our
episode...
longest ever.
I don't know if we'll hit that, but we'll see.
I'm pretty sure we will.
Anyway... it's episode 13. It needed to be Luke Skeetastic, and that's, yeah, that. So, let us move on to our third song.
Slap.
She slapped me because I burped a little bit, for those who missed it, because it was kind of a quiet one. Here's a song by Carla Ulbrich. And, you know, we know it's by Carla Ulbrich because it kind of tells us that's her name in the song. So, here we go.
My name is Carla. It is not Darla. It is not Clara, Carol, Claire, Marla, or Starla. My middle initial is a K. It stands for K. But the first name is C-A-R-L-A. Carla Ulbrich. What's in a name? A name is a name is a name is a name is a name. As for the last name, here's the hitch. Should be pronounced Ulbrich, but we say Ulbrich, though there's no K in sight. We were German, we would say it right. Carla Ulbrich, a German name. A rose that had my name would smell the same. I was in Borders, standing in line. Book of baby names caught my eye. Under Carla, said C. Charles. I thought it was gonna say C. Carl, cause that's my dad's name and my granddad's. They tried for a boy and the closest one they had under Charles, almost uncanny. Charles's definition is manly. Carla Ulbrich, a manly name. Man is only as good as her name. My great-great-grandmother, she was Deutsch. She fell in love with a stable boy. They had a baby, was a cute one. But the stable boy's last name was Von Funnekuchen. How do you spell that? For heaven's sake. Translated, it means pancake. Carla Pancake, that I could see. Pancakes are short and sweet, just like me. I'm singing a song about my name. You must think that I am really vain, but I'm not the first one to have such a song. Bingo had one and he was just a dog.
All right, Carla Ulbrich. Visit carlau.com, I believe it is.
I believe so.
All right. Let's rifle through the rest of the stuff quickly.
What's Luke plugging now?
Yeah. Do you want to read these?
What's at the Fump? What's at that Fump?
It's
funny
a gopher now.
What's at the Fump? Why, it's Steve Goody's Ecstasy of the Bilious Water Poodle.
Yeah, it's a Worm Quartet style parody.
Haven't heard it yet.
Yeah.
Hot Waffles, America's Worst Driver, TV's Kyle, Stop Moping Around, Lemon Demons, Redesign Your Logo, Tom Smith's Just Give the Money to Me, Cirque du Soleil Stooge Fighter, along with Nifty Video, Devo Spice's Disclaimer, Nuclear Bubble Wraps, and Nuclear Bubble Wraps, Know Your Power Chords.
One of our many awesome fans who has a couple of interesting handles is Molo Quay. Names are weird and online handles are spelled oddly and you don't know how to pronounce them.
Yes. And you don't even know if the person is male or female, do you?
I don't know.
No, he doesn't know.
Thank you, Internet, for creating anonymity.
Androgyny.
I don't know who people are. But yeah, there's an awesome fan video of the song Anime Fan, so please go check that out and on YouTube, and I've posted about it everywhere I usually post nifty things. So.
And did you know you can go to drdemento.com and request for Dr. Demento to play Anime Fan?
Yes.
And did you also know you can go to drdemento.com and you could request Dr. Demento to play Reckoned by the Book by Carrie Dalby again? And
you could request him to play Stooge Fighter, because Dr. Demento played that on his show last week, and that made me very happy. Cirque du Soleil. Speaking of Cirque du Soleil, Cirque du Soleil has an album.
Oh, do they now?
Yes, and it can be purchased at CirqueDuSoleil.com. No, .net. Excuse me, CirqueDuSoleil.net and BaconNipples.com. So if you enjoyed the Gilbert piece, there's much more like it on the album.
Now I'm like wanting a JPEG of Bacon Nipples. It needs to... Or is there a JPEG there of Bacon Nipples? I've never actually gone to the website.
No, it's just the Cirque du Soleil website.
It's just a redirect, right?
Yeah, basically.
Because like every time I hear that, I'm like, there needs to be a picture of a nipple made out of bacon.
You saw the video, right? The little promotional video I made way back when?
Yeah.
Because I had some strips of bacon next to some pictures of rubber nipples, and that was my representation.
Oh, okay. But I mean, like, an actual, like... You know, a man's hairy chest, but, like, you know, some bacon where the nipple should be.
Okay.
Cirque du so what?
Yeah, okay. Artbylukeski.com is a website where I do art, and, yeah, so buy art from me so that I'm not broke. Free MP3.
Hey, did you notice one time recently Carla Ulbrich on her Facebook, she was like, does anybody know the name of that term for when you... get a cartoon made out of one of your pictures, and I said artbylukeski.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was proud of myself, but nobody was there to laugh at it. You didn't even see it.
Sometimes Facebook gets wonky with me. Free MP3 of the week at lukeski.com right now is Insane and the Brain. Tour dates coming up. PenguinCon, which is awesome. It has tons and tons of music there, including Carrie Dalby.
And Bad Rapport will be represented.
Yes, Bad Rapport will be represented.
During the Carrie Dalby concert.
Yes, there will be an awesome presentation that is Bad Rapport related. You are not going to want to miss it. If you are a fan of this podcast, you absolutely must go to Carrie Dalby's concert and see what will be in store there.
Yes, please, yes. Please. And yes, I'll have ribbons. They don't have anything to do with Bad Rapport, but I have ribbons.
You know, the four guys from Cirque du Soleil are going to get ribbons.
I know, but I'm getting similar ribbons, but they're different colors.
Yes. Then I'm going to be making a quick appearance at DemiCon out in Des Moines. PenguinCon's in Detroit, if we didn't mention that. DemiCon is in Des Moines. I'll be there. KeyCon is in Winnipeg. I'll be there with the three other guys from Cirque du Soleil, which will be quite epic.
It's funny, you got tour dates on the outline, but you don't have any of the dates.
Well, people can go to, you know, lukeski.com.
PenguinCon is April 30th through May 2nd, so...
Well, I guess I'll have to add that to future outlines.
May 1st is the date of the Carrie Dalby concert and the Fump concert. Is that when the Lukeski concert is also?
I don't remember.
Okay. But that's when you need to come see the Bad Rapport thing at PenguinCon. Okay.
DemiCon is in Des Moines. KeyCon is in Winnipeg, Canada, with Cirque du Soleil. It's going to be awesome. KeyCon is also where I'm going to be releasing... my first full-on, real, legitimate compilation. It'll be the 2-CD set of Lukeski's Greatest Hits, Volume 1, 1996-2003. I'm working on getting it mastered and making it nifty. So
and giving me a free one.
Of course.
I've been on enough Lukeski songs that I'm just like, okay, give me free merchandise now. Okay, what's the next free merchandise? Okay, that's free too, right? Give it to me. Okay. And what's next on the list?
Hypericon, which is in Nashville. And then Nerdapalooza, which is in Orlando. Nerdapalooza will also feature Devo Spice, Worm Quartet, Positive Attitude, MC Frontalot, Schaefer the Dark Lord, and lots of other awesome people. So that'll be...
And the dates got changed on that
yeah, it's in July now. July 16th and 17th. And this is kind of an odd, kind of opposite thing. I need to specifically mention places where I'm not performing just because I feel it's important to let my fans know. because I may have actually for the first one here said that I was going to be there, but things have changed. I will not be at MarCon this year
in
Columbus, Ohio. There was no way I could figure out a way to do that convention and make a profit at it this year, and to explain why would take far too long and other reasons not to explain it. But that's just the situation. And to make matters worse for you, the Columbus area fans, I will also not be at MarCon in 2011 because I have been asked to be a guest of honor at Conquest in Kansas City that weekend. So I won't be at MarCon this year or next year. So maybe I'll be at MarCon 2012. However, there is a saving grace. There is a couple of Columbus conventions happening in October, one of which I'm booked to perform at, but I'm kind of I'm actually their music guest of honor, but this con has like changed dates and changed cities like twice now. Mm. So it's kind of like, all right, well, it's on my schedules, I'm going to be there, but I'm going to keep my eye on this because, you know, you never know if this thing's going to fold.
Yeah.
You know, if once it gets closer, if it seems like a much more definite thing. I did call the hotel and make sure it was still happening on in the hotel's records, and they said yes. So I might be in Columbus, or there's a good chance I'll be in Columbus in October. I just won't be there for MarCon 2010 or MarCon 2011. So.
And where else are you not going?
I'm also, and this pains me to say it, it really pains me to say it, I just can't figure out a way to make going to Convergence profitable for me. Convergence over the, you know, it used to be profitable, and then it became a con where, well, as long as I sell enough CDs to break even on my travel costs, I can hang out in the Twin Cities and have fun and justify being there. And
you could find a festival to go draw caricatures at.
It's 4th of July weekend. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, I
need to be where...
For 1 year, for this summer, I need to skip it because I need to save up for the wedding. And you know, if I go draw at, you know, Key Lime Cove and Ed DeBevick's and such, I can make, you know, at least
decent
a good
money.
At least a good $600, you know, without losing any money on traveling and blah 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 blah. So, yeah, I did email the dealer's room at Convergence to asking them for info. They never got back to me. I'm assuming this means that they're all full up and they won't have room for me. So
Minnesota fans, you could sponsor Luke Ski. Just pay him $600 and pay his you know, all his transportation and hotel costs, and he'll be there. Otherwise.
Basically, yeah. If people in the Twin Cities would cover my transportation and hotel, so that all the money I made,
that was a joke.
Well,
you mean if they like covered all of your expenses?
Yeah, like I'm not saying pay me $600. I'm paying if I didn't have to worry about travel expenses and hotel expenses, so that all the money I made performing at Harmonic Convergence was money I could take home, so I could make at least $200 or $300, and then that to me would be enough to justify it. But most of the time, okay, the hotel and the gas cost $200 to $300, and then it's break-even city.
Right.
And the other place I'm not performing, unfortunately, is Woodstock, Chicago. I had let Paul and Storm know that I was interested, and you know they pinged me back saying, yes, we know you're interested, we'll get back to you.
Because if he had gotten it, we would have been doing Grease Wars.
Yeah.
And that would have, like, kicked everyone's ass.
Yeah,
it would have been so awesome.
You know, as many of you probably know, Chicago was a huge city for comedy. And, you know, it's not surprising that they had, like, way, you know, an abundance of acts to choose from. And, you know, Paul said that they're going to keep me in mind for future Chicago Woodstocks. But that, you know, it's just, you know, this time, it's like me being at being the guy in charge at MarsCon for the Dementia Track. It's like, you know, sometimes I'm going to have to pick people to not perform, and it's going to be a really sucky decision, but it's just the way it goes. So I'm trying not to get too bummed out about it, and, you know, I already got tickets. You know, I bought tickets right when they went on sale, so it's like, I'm going, I'm going to have a great time, so I'll be attending with Sarah and many other friends, you know, but I will not be performing, so.
Yeah, bummer.
It's actually the same weekend as Hypericon, so I'm going to have to, like, get up early on Sunday morning and drive from Nashville to Chicago to make sure I get to Woodstock in time. So
you won't be hanging out with the Bill and the Moonbeam who are planning to come in for the whole weekend?
No, I'm not. I'm
sorry,
not.
Bill and Moonbeam. I'll be around.
So.
I'll be around. Am I? Yes, I'll be around.
All right, so you said you had an ignorant story.
Yes. Sunday afternoon, I was at the grocery store, just grocery shopping, minding my own business, and, like, some skinny, like, teenager with braces comes up to me, and he just, like, gets up in my face, and he's like, I have BB. And I'm like, what? And he's like, I have BB. I said, what? I have BB. No. And he walked away.
I have BB?
Well, baby, I think he was saying. Oh. I have baby. I, you know, the only, like, possible conclusion I could come to is that he was trying to say, you have baby, like, as if I was pregnant. And that's the only, but then he said, I have baby. And it was just totally fucking random and weird and odd and oddball and bizarro and yikes. And what's your ignorance stories?
Well, okay, caricature. Another, there was a girl whose name was Georgia, and it was spelled J-O-R-J-A. So I found that interesting.
Actually, on the Dr. Floyd joke jamboree, Dr. Grant's joke jamboree thing, there was a girl named Allegra. I thought that was pretty bad.
So, okay, these are kind of old. I'm trying to remember what happened. There was a guy who came to my stand. He looks at it, and he's like, you know, and, you know, I have four pictures on there as my demo sketches. The $5 drawing of the black and white head is of House from the TV show House. Then there's Indiana Jones, and there's Miley Cyrus, and there's the full color with a body drawing of Iron Man. And so this guy comes up. He's like in his, I don't know, 50s or whatever, and he's like, well, maybe not 50s. He was his 40s. He was just kind of like an adult. He kind of reminded me of that Australian dude who used to do the battery commercials in the 80s. He just had like this big, you know, look to him or whatever, kind of a crew-cutted white dude. And, you know, and he's like, you know, hey, give me one of those $5 drawings. And I'm like, okay, sure. It's like, you know, it's like, or no, first thing I was like, hey, can you draw me and, you know, make me like Iron Man? And I'm like, yeah, like, so you want the $20 drawing? He's like, oh, no, I want the, you know, give me the $5 one. I'm like, okay, and he sits down, I draw his head, and then it gets to the bottom where I'm supposed to write his name. And I'm like, okay, what do you want for your name? And he says, Iron Man!
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, so I write Iron Man, and then I hand the drawing to him. And then he looks confused, as if he didn't understand what was about to transpire.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was expecting, he's, you know, sat down and I'm there like that Jay Leno story kid, you know, just like, you know, was he expecting me to draw Robert Downey Jr. or was he expecting me to draw him as Iron Man but only from the shoulders up in black and white? I don't understand what, you know. And I think the guy walked off without paying me, and because I know I still have a copy of that drawing, so it's like, that was messed up.
Okay.
On a similar note, I think this one was at Key Lime Cove. Like, some guy looks at my sign, he comes around for us, like, hey, can you draw her and I together? And he's like, well, you know, sure, what kind do you want? Oh, give us ones with the bodies. Let me start over. The guy walks up and he's like, yeah, can you draw us? And it's like, yeah. It's like, what, you know, we want a scene and stuff. It's like, yeah, okay, so what do you want me to draw? Dr. Evil. It's like, so you want me to draw you as Dr. Evil? He's like, no, I mean, like, can you draw me but make me be like Dr. Evil? I'm like, you mean with Dr. Evil's body in your head? And he's like, no, I mean, like, he was like, you know, because, like, there wasn't, there. I mean, back in the day I had a Dr. Evil demo sketch, but he's not there. So it's like, yeah. I'm trying, it's like, are you trying to get me to draw Mike Myers or you or some kind? It's like, it just drives me nuts when these people can't articulate what they want. And I can't even remember what they ended up doing. I don't know. I get so exasperated. That's why I try to do these ignorant stories like really quick,
so
while they're still
get them out of your brain.
Yeah, so that they're still fresh, because I'm getting fuzzy on the details. This one, the last one here, happened just over the weekend. I'm sitting there with my sign, and once again, you know, black and white, head and shoulders with the name, $5 a person. You know, which is a really good price for those of you who don't know. If you're going to Six Flags, those things cost $15 a person, and I'm charging $5. So this woman comes by, and you know, it was like some, you know, big overweight, you know, white mother, and you know, she's got like four kids there, and it's the kind of thing where I'm sitting in my chair that's kind of sunk low because I need it to be sunk low, so that I can draw properly, and she's like standing right behind me, so I'm basically having to like cock my head straight up in the sky, like, oh look, it's an airplane. Like, I have to be like looking directly up because she's standing behind me, so she's talking to me from like, you know, some weird prostrated thing because she won't walk around in front of me and talk to me face to face. So she's like, how much is it to draw four kids? And I'm like, well, for four kids in black and white, it's $20. She's like, $20, that seems like a bit much to me. I'd be willing to give you 10. And I'm like, I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm not willing to drop 10. Well, $20 is quite a lot. And I said to her, ma'am, if this was Six Flags... Well, I don't get them done at Six Flags. Well, still, ma'am, if this was Six Flags, you'd have to pay $60 for the drawing. Yeah. And she goes, oh. And then a pause. 16? No, so, no.
16.
No, I said no, 60. And she goes, ow! And then she walks off. And I'm just like, fucking people.
Oh my God.
I mean, like,
your job.
It's like, you know, I'm giving you $40 off the going rate for this thing,
yeah,
and you're still going to be a bitch to me.
Yeah.
It was almost more, it's almost like sometimes parents do this thing where it's like, I really have no intention of getting this drawing from word one, but I need to pretend I'm interested in getting it for the sake of my kid because they've asked, and if I ask you a price and then say that's too high, it makes you look like an asshole and not me, so my kid will still like me and think you're the jerk for charging too much. I've seen that happen over and over again.
There's got to be like some shtick you can do where like you can turn around and make them look stupid in front of their kids. Not in an adult.
Well, it's hard to because I'm always afraid of if I go too far, somebody will complain.
No, but not in a mean way, well, just in a funny way, you know?
Anyway, it is near the end of the show. Whoa, it's way near the end of the show. It's time for comments. And guess what? The comments are really long, too. Wow.
I've told you, it's the longest show ever.
All right, so do you want to go?
I think we get the right because it's the number 13.
Yes, number 13, we get to go long because I say so, damn it. Do you want to go first?
I guess. Actually, you go first, because I don't want to read that long one.
All right. Here's a comment from Captain Nova. Thanks for mentioning the Cirque du Soleil fan page. Talking about stuff I remember for cartoons, I remember it is a sci-fi cartoon called The Galaxy Rangers. I just wonder if Carrie would give us what the origin of Hedwig Robinson was. And she already did. Yay.
Asked and delivered.
So, there we go.
Medamia asks, how about the origins of What's Wrong with This Song? Well, I actually had 5 song origin requests. I guess it's either feast or famine on that. So I'm saving some of them for the next 1 or 2 shows. Metamia goes on to say, we are going to have to wait 3 weeks until we hear about Luke's adventures in jail. Oh, you're going to have to talk about that. What's wrong with this world? What's wrong with this song? Some post jail questions. Was it Jive being the hip turkey? Could you make a contraption to reach the keys using a mop and the rack hook while Deputy Fife was sleeping? Did you get to spend your incarceration time with Paris and Brittany? And could you stay longer if you wanted? Hope everything comes out okay. But I was basically, you sat an hour in like a chair.
Yeah, right? I was like, you know, they opened the jail. I walked in the jail and I, you know, stood in the hallway. Like, they never even put me in a cell. They like patted me down. They looked at this and that. They kind of went through all the motions, took down some information. I was like, you know, out of there in 45 minutes, walked next door to the courthouse, waited to talk to the judge. The judge did blah, 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 blah. And, you know, basically it means that I have to, you know, not get pulled over for speeding between now and October 1st. And if that happens, then the ticket will magically disappear and never have existed. So
not get pulled over for speeding in that county or at all?
I think at all. I think in the state of Illinois. So, oh,
okay. So don't speed then. Don't speed, kiddos.
Yeah, that's and that's, well, not
I speed all the time.
That's the thing. I think generally in society, but especially in Illinois, but especially in the Chicagoland area,
yes.
If you drive the speed limit, you're an asshole.
You're going to get
everybody
rammed.
Hates you,
yes.
and you're some kind of, you know, inconsiderate jerk if you dare
Indeed.
Do the speed limit.
Indeed.
Speed limit.
Definitely.
It's so fucking unfair. And then the cops pull you over and they give you the tickets and they give you all these speeches and. You know, it's like, well, fucking change the speed limits around here. Because I saw something on the news, like it's like there's possible whatever, you know, things that might be passed that's going to raise the speed limit around here to 70. And I would love that, because that's how fast people drive anyway.
But, like, I mean, they're just going to go 5 miles faster than they already do. So it wouldn't necessarily be the best idea if they actually raised it.
Yeah, so I'm sorry I have no, you know, wacky, interesting jail stories for you, but that's... You know, it was just some... Well, here's one thing, though. When I was talking to the judge, and they were like, oh, this is actually from a ticket from 2007, the judge is like, oh, we finally caught you, huh? And, like, I kept my mouth shut, but in my brain I'm thinking, actually, sir, you didn't catch me for shit. I found out about this because I got, you know, another pulled over ticket thing in Cook County. They made me aware of the existence of your warrant, and I decided to go through a pretty decent amount of effort calling multiple phone numbers to try to find your county so I could get this taken care of.
Yeah.
So this is only happening because of an extreme amount of effort from me, not to mention me driving 2 hours out to the middle of bumfuck Illinois. So don't pretend that you caught me.
But they finally caught you.
Oh, they finally caught me. I don't know why I did a Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Because you do that voice. Randomly always.
Where was I? Oh, yes. Next, Sean. Sean, don't worry about not remembering half the stuff that you did in post-secondary school, college. But still remember TV trivia from when you were a teenager. Everyone is like that. The jocks remember some high school football play. The stoners remember the time that Jimmy got so hosed that he inserted something embracing. I think he meant embarrassing.
Yeah.
Etc. College is not about remembering how to navigate every rabbit hole. It's about learning where the rabbit holes are. You can figure them out when you need to. Speaking of animation, I was listening to The Ballad of Optimus Prime on my way to work, and I was thinking it needed a video. Sadly, I think it would be best with a Robot Chicken-esque stop-motion animation treatment, which I don't think is what you want to do. However, a Middle East country would be a good candidate. Imagine a mountain troll singing at a mic next to a cutout of a fictitious country at her own mic. You could reuse a lot of poses a la the old 60s Spider-Man cartoon and get a lot of bang for your buck. So, there we go.
Randy Porter states... When I was a youth in the late 70s, the Saturday cartoon preview was a big deal. It was exactly as you say. Another thing that also tipped us off were the centerfolds that the networks would buy in that month's comic books, giving the exact time of the new shows. They'd put in blurbs new and live action to indicate we weren't going to get the same old crappy reruns. Wolfman Jack did the intros for Fonz and the Happy Days Gang cartoon, where the gang climbs on a runway UFO with Cupcake, Girl of the Future. I covered all these back on my old podcast, Smitecast, on show number one from 2007.
Hey.
Don't jump that chart.
And now, Blasted Bill! Another well-timed moment on the rapport. I was getting my notepad and pen ready for episode 12 just as you read my last show's comment where I said I now have taken to taking notes. I have empathy for the bitch ball because I whine a lot myself.
Yeah.
I love Josh's songs! I want to hear more. Luke's Barney impression freaked me the fuck out, though. I grew up on a farm, as I've mentioned many times. Saturday mornings, we got up, went outside to do chores, had breakfast, work on farm projects, then got a few hours to goof off outside in the afternoon. So I never got to see morning cartoons as a kid unless I was over at a friend's house. So I would watch Saturday morning cartoons in college no matter how late I was up on Friday. I remember one time Luke was over at my place admiring my new TiVo and commented on how I watched more cartoons than he did. And I remember that. It was an epic amount of cartoons. There was a lot of episodes of Duckman on there. I missed that show. See you in a few weeks, and remember, comments go in the middle of the show. Wait, what? Ah, damn. Forgot other parts of my comment because I done bad note-taking. I recommend Luke tells the Use the Force Luke origin story because I need to be mentioned more on your show for Carrie.
I've only mentioned you 20 times this show.
For Carrie, I think the only song I don't know the origin of is Hazy Shade of Killer, so tell that one.
Next time.
For best of CD, I myself can't re-listen to listen to podcasts. It just bores me because I've already heard it and I have so much else to listen to. So I don't have much in the way of input on a best of CD. But for sure, you have to include the first time Luke used the Royal Carey voice. I think that's it for this time now. Yay. Look, a monkey.
And Pooh Bear says, first off, I'd like to hear about I Really Did Go to School Naked background. Okay, delivered. I loved the last few episodes, 9.5, 10, 11, and 12, which I listened all this weekend. I have not been working OT, it's been squelched, so I've been forgetting to listen. I enjoyed them all. On the note about you asking about segments, it's hard to name segments. Plus your stuff, a lot of times one thing flows into another, and just separating a segment might be hard to do and might lose something if broken away. Yeah, well, of course it will, but there's we're still going to do it anyways. Luke mentions a bunch of 80s shows that were all Miller Boyett productions and are favorite shows of my wife. She keeps watching the reruns and sometimes DVRs them. And next up.
Final comment here.
Final texty-text comment.
Yes, from Byron Lee. I don't know if you guys are going to read this as another episode has aired since number 12 has been released. Worst episode ever.
I think he's comparing it to, like, worst album ever.
Okay.
Like, it's a
yes,
joke.
Yes, that's what I assume. No, really, but I had to get that in there somewhere. Anyway, I have been trying to work on my health a little, so I listened on my Motorola Droid while I walked to Big Lots. I really love this store. If anything can motivate me to exercise, it's a chance to go shopping. Too bad food is generally the reason why you get fat, because that's even more motivating. I have walked 2.5 miles to go to an Arby's. It's too bad I put all that fat back on with a Big Montana curly fries and a Coke.
I'm pretty sure I've done something like that in my past.
Yes. Anyway, I just wanted to say that Carrie has been a big inspiration for me to start working out and watching my weight. Thanks for motivating me to make a positive change in my life. Keep up the good work. They say that laughter burns calories, so I figure I'll do a workout every time there's a bad report episode to listen to. I figure I'll be doing double duty if I'm laughing and walking at the same time.
So now we're going to feel guilty if we go too long between episodes because you won't be working out.
Well, now we get every 2 weeks. We got to keep doing that. I hate 3 week spans.
Yeah, so
damn it.
I'm not fond of it either.
Okay.
I was just going to say, actually, I apparently inspired my coworkers because a couple of them, having seen the weight I lost on Weight Watchers, are starting up a Weight Watchers at work thing. So,
cool.
So, yeah, it'll be a pain in the ass for me because I have a monthly pass, which is the only kind of user that's not allowed to easily transfer to an at-work meeting, but it'll be worth it so that I can have some of my evenings back for 12 weeks or whatever.
All right, time for voicemail comments that were left on our voicemail line, which is 916-LUKE-SKI, 916-LUKESKI. You, too, can leave messages just like this.
Hey, Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport, it's Arkle. Listening to the last show, and you're telling your latest batch of True Tales of Ignorance, and you get to the part where you're talking about, just pausing for a second to let the urge to murder go away, and you have no idea how easy you really have it, man. I mean, I work at a 7-Eleven. I worked there for 2 years, and I can tell you with some degree of authority that Kevin Smith's Clerks was actually a documentary. My all-time favorite, man. This one's from last year, and I still get angry about it occasionally. It's, as you may be aware, 7-Elevens, you know, we're not allowed to have more than $30 in a drawer at any given time. If we have more than that, we got to put them in the safe. We can't have $10 bills in the drawer. We got to put those directly into the safe and all that. And it is a busy day, and this guy is trying to pay for, like, $9 worth of candy with a $50 bill. And if he was by himself, I would just say, it's like, okay, I can do this for you, but the change will take a couple of minutes. Because I would have to actually go to the safe to get their change, and at the time, we could only get a maximum of $20 out every 2 minutes. They've upped it to $40 for us. $40 every 2 minutes. But I tell this guy, like, look, I just can't do this. I don't have enough in my drawer. And he's like, look, that's legal tender. You have to do that, or I can call the FBI on you. I'm like, look, sir, I just don't have enough change. And I'm trying to be as polite as possible as I can with this guy. So the guy just snatches back the 50, which I wasn't even holding on to. It was on the counter, and he snatches it back like he's yanking it out of my hand, like I'm trying to take it from him. And then he turns to his toddler, who he has in his arm, And he goes, okay, little boy, you just take a nice long piss on the counter here. What kind of example are you setting for your child? I still get angry about that one. Oh, man. It's a wonder the murder rate in this country is as relatively low as it is. You know, I mean, the violent crime been on a decline since the 1970s, but, ooh, I so wanted to reach across the counter and punch that guy. Anyway, yeah, that's my true tale of ignorance. Have a great show.
Wow.
That's a good one.
There's one detail I think he left out. He didn't say if the toddler actually did piss all over the counter or didn't actually do it.
I think it's kind of implied that the kid did somehow. But
well, let us know.
Yes, clarify that.
Yeah, because it's a pretty horrifying story either way. But wow. And I've worked in retail quite a bit, and I never had a rule about $30. I don't even see how you could work like that. Kudos to you for being able to do that shit.
Yes,
and
kudos.
For not quitting that fucking very day.
And you know what? Maybe that should be as the voicemail comments thing. If you guys have your own true tales of ignorance from wherever it is you work or your day-to-day lives, just let that was Arkel.
Yeah.
just like Arkel did.
If you have a really good one anyways,
yeah.
Like that.
Keeping in mind that the thing cuts off after whatever it is, like two and a half minutes. If you can keep it under 2.5 minutes and you got a good ignorant story,
yeah.
Call 916-LUKESKI, let us know what it is, and we'll play it on the show.
Arkel, you got to go to that Customers Aren't Always Right website or whatever it's called. And
NotAlwaysRight.com, I think is what it is.
Yeah, so if you haven't already done so, you need to post that there.
All right, here's the next voicemail comment.
Hey, Luke and Carrie, this is your co-host again. Great show and funny April Fool's joke. Sounds like one of the old 80s and 90s R&B, hip-hop shows. And you do actually sound like one of the old DJs. Have fun with the shows. Bye.
Thanks. I think you have to read the Google Voice translation of this one.
Yeah, I think we'll probably restrict reading the Google Voice translations now just to the short ones, because it just takes up way too much time. But the Google Voice translation of Draconis' message says, "Hey, looking very, this is Rick Vincent, Rachel, and funding April Fool's joke. So I'd like to want to hold 80s and 90s, or indeed two. Well, hey, pop shows, and you actually sell like one of the old DJs. Have fun with it, shows. 5. So thank you, Draconis, and yes, he's referring to the April Fool's Day edition of Dementia Revolution, in which I did the entire episode as DJ What's-His-Face from Power Hot Radio. Carrie called into that episode, as well as the other members of Cirque du Soleil, and it's still
Josh
out there.
Josh called in, too.
Yeah, Josh, oh yeah, he called into the... Leave the shout outs. So
yeah, he was calling in as What's-His-Face from
King
of the Hill.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and I still have that up if you want to listen to it. Go to the Bad Rapport Facebook page and just look back to about April 2nd, I believe, is when I put the link up for people to listen to it. So you can hear that if you missed it the first time around. It was a pretty good old fun time, 2 hours of old school hip hop and me being silly with my friends on the internet. So, all right, let me queue up this one here. Whoops, got to turn that to that. Finally getting the hang of how I'm
doing. Oh, we have another long one?
Yes, and it's a celebrity.
Ooh.
Here we go.
Hey, Luke and Carrie, this is Devo Spice. Hey, how about that? I finally remembered to call in. I listen to your show, and I, every time you guys say something, I'm like, hey, I can comment on that. Hey, I can comment on that, and then I completely forget to call in. Anyway, I wanted to comment on Carrie talking about my stage video for Getting Old Sucks and comparing it to the animation on Plants vs. Zombies. I've actually never played Plants vs. Zombies. The inspiration for the Getting Old Sucks video was the vintage cartoons that you can probably find them on YouTube now. But they were made in like the 1910s and 1920s. Back then, everything had a smiley face on it and was dancing. So you get like clouds dancing and flowers dancing, and everything danced to the same unheard rhythm because they were usually silent films. That's the look I was trying to capture on Getting Old Sucks. And I did a halfway decent job. I couldn't quite mimic it, but I'm pretty happy with that video. And I guess Plants vs. Zombies was kind of inspired by the same look. And Luke, you've been talking about doing some animation. I actually have a recommendation for you for software. It's fairly inexpensive. I believe it's either $99 or like $129. And it's a vector animation software that supports bones. And if you don't know what that means, just trust me, it's damn cool. It's called Anime Studio. It used to be called Moho. It was a shareware program called Moho that got bought out by some publisher. And now it's called Anime Studio. That's the one I used for anything that has character animation. So my Getting Old Sucks video was done with Anime Studio. And a couple of the other video of the zombies in the brain food stage video were done in Moho. So if you're serious about doing some real animations, look into that. It's really cool software. And it has automated lip sync and, you know, soundtracks and stuff like that. It's a really nice piece of work. So that's all. I'll talk to you guys later, and I guess I'll see you guys at PenguinCon. Later.
Yay.
Yeah, I remember when I first saw the animations for the first time I saw the Getting Old Sucks animation, I was laughing out loud continuously for like the first 30, 45 seconds because I immediately...
It's hysterical.
I immediately recognized it. It's like, you know, Happy Tree! Happy... And I was just like...
I didn't recognize where it was inspired from, but I found it... hysterical. Josh finds it extremely disturbing. Thanks for calling in, Devo Spice.
Yes, thank
you,
Devo.
Made us feel special. And guess what? Google Voice recognized a lot of what you said. I think it's because you speak in a clear and concise manner, unlike, you know, many other people. So.
And you know what? Remember last episode we were talking about the other funny music people that listened to the show.
Yeah.
I think we forgot to mention TV's Kyle. So
I wasn't aware that TV's Kyle was a listener.
Oh yeah, he's left comments and stuff.
Has he?
I'm pretty
sure.
Well,
I'm pretty like stupid and forgetful, so you know, there's that.
So, once again, if you want to make comments for the show... let me finish saying what I was going to say about Devo's thing about the animation. Thank you for telling me that. I will look it up when I have when I get to the point where I'm researching actually getting these programs. I will look it up and stuff. The difference, though, between what I want to do and what you do is that I want to try to do like the traditional hand-drawn, you know, cell-by-cell, you know, traditional look. And as far as I can tell, the programs you use are that more kind of flat 2D, you know, based on Flash animation or like the way South Park does it. Like everything's very 2D and stuff like that, and kind of connecting together pieces. And you know, it works awesomely for what you're doing. And you know, obviously, you know, millions of people are also using this type of stuff to create things. I'm just, you know, my mojo is wanting to do that, like, traditional hand-drawn that you could tell it's a real cartoony cartoon that, you know, a whole bunch of artists made, or in this case, that I made.
Are you sure what he was talking about can't be used for what you want to
Well,
do?
I will research that and find out. But thinking about the Brain Food video and the Getting Old Sucks video and thinking about what I want to do seems like they aren't quite the same thing.
But
like I said, I will look into that. Okay. Sarah looked up and found some animation software things that I need to look into as well. But so anyway, thank you very much, Devo Spice. And like we said before, check out the song Disclaimer at thefump.com. So comments. If you want to leave a comment, you can do so at badreport.com. Please do. We love getting them and we love reading them.
I know it's a lot of comments to read and to listen to, but I just enjoy how enthusiastic you guys are.
Yes.
It really makes me happy and feel good. I always am checking badreport.com on my phone to see the latest comments.
Although I have to say, we have gotten zero comments on the Luke and Moonbeam and Carrie and Blasted Bill's Pod Report of Destiny episode 2 from MarsCon, the 20-minute episode we posted last week. I think it might be that people heard it on Bill's feed first, but there weren't any comments over on his side either. So if you still want to make a comment about the MarsCon episode, you're welcome to. We'll read that in the next episode. Or you can make a comment on this episode. Either way, badrapport.com, BADRAPPORT.com. If you have anything you want to give us some feedback that won't be read on the air, you can email us at badrapport@gmail.com.
And we will make an effort to make the next show not as long and
yes.
to make it in 2 weeks.
Yes. We want to do the episodes every 2 weeks so that all these ideas we get over that time don't build up to the point where we're doing a show that's busting at
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. So, hey, episode 13, we can get away with it.
Woo-hoo. Okay, and we can get away with it on episode 27.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah, and of course, like I said, leave messages at 916-LUKESKI. That's 916-LUKESKI. It's made up of numbers of what they are. I don't remember. 916 Luke Ski. And also you can leave an iTunes review for us. We've had 13 people rate us on iTunes, and 8 of them gave us 5 stars, and five of them gave us 4 stars.
And we'd love more positive reviews.
Yeah, so please leave more reviews for us at iTunes. And that is about it. We are going to go out with a song. Sometimes you get a song stuck in your head, and sometimes you get a very specific performance of a specific song stuck in your head.
Yes.
And once again, this kind of falls under things only Luke remembers. There was a short-lived show on NBC called The Jim Henson Hour, where they had a segment called Muppet Television, where Kermit and various other characters, you know, did sketches with celebrities, you know, somewhat similar to The Muppet Show and the later Muppets Tonight. In the first episode, they ended it by all singing Chattanooga Choo Choo. And that was stuck in my head for a very long time until finally I'm like, okay, and went on Twitter and I'm like, if somebody has an MP3 of that, send it to me. Somebody found it. I think they ripped it off of a YouTube video, which was done from a VHS tape, which wasn't really that great of a quality. So I apologize for the shitty quality of this last song, but the only way I can expel the demon is to put it in your brain. So sorry, you're getting this song. And a side note, you're going to hear somebody with a high-pitched voice during the bridge talking to Kermit. It was Louis Anderson, and he was dressed up in a weird bunny suit at the time. And that explains the joke that they do.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So thanks for downloading and listening to Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. I have been Carrie.
I have been Luke, and this was episode 13.
Yay!
And remember, 1-3... 13th letter of the alphabet is letter M. Stands for marijuana. 420. It all makes sense, man. I am the gopher.
Barney boy is at the Chattanooga choo-choo. Try 29, or you can give me a shine. I can afford to board a Chattanooga choo-choo.
I've got my fare, and just a trifle to spare. Leave the Pennsylvania station at 3:45.
Read a magazine and then you're in Baltimore. Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer.
Then you have your ham and eggs in Carolina.
Well, there's gonna be a certain party at the station.
Saturday, I used to call Bunny Faye.
That's not a costume.
What?
We've merchandised you to 16 toy companies.
Get my agent on the phone.
When you hear the whistle blowing into the bar, then you know the Tennessee is not very far. Shovel all the coal in, gotta keep it rolling.
Woo-hoo, Chattanooga, there you are.
There's gonna be a certain party at the station.